I want to believe that we now form a quorum, so we may proceed. Shall we bow down, bow our heads and observe a moment of silence for prayer or meditation? Thank you. Okay. Well, I'd like to greet the honorable members. I would like to also greet the representatives from the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. I would like to greet members from the Department of Communications and the South African Post Office. Are they here? They'll be joining us at 11. I'm sure honourable members are okay with that. Honourable members, okay, we may proceed without them. They'll be joining at 11. All right, no, that's fine. I would like to check if National Treasury is in this place. Okay, but what I know is that there's a budget lukutla. So I know all of them are supposed to be at that budget. It's budget council. So we were supposed to be there, but we apologized because of the pressure of work. So, okay. And yesterday I got an apology from the minister, a written apology from the minister. Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to also greet and welcome the staff members, all stakeholders and all guests. You are welcome. I wish to welcome you to this very important meeting where we will be receiving a briefing from the invited departments on the 2017 Adjustment Appropriation Bill. As honorable members will know, in the middle of each year, the adjustments process provides an opportunity to make permissible revision to the main budget in response to changes that have affected the planned government spending for that year. This is all part of South Africa's open and accountable budget process. Therefore, with these few words, let's have a fruitful engagement and let's have a free, open, and robust discussion. It's our meeting. Let's make sure that the money that has been spent on this meeting is well spent. There's no wasteful expenditure or fruitless expenditure, as we would like to see departments doing. You are all welcome. Now I'd like to check on the apologies.
Good morning, Chairperson, members and guests. From the Standing Committee on Appropriations, we received an apology from Mr. Seki Mam. He will be running late. And then there's a standing apology from Mr. Mainir. Also, as alluded to by yourself, the Minister of Telecommunications and Postal Services apologized. Thank you.
I received it. So keep this noted. Okay. All right. Honorable Member McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honourable Topham is on his way. He's just stuck in the traffic from the airport. He should be joining us soon. And may I be excused at 11 o'clock today, please? I have something I have to go and attend to. If you need a quorum for the deliberation letter, the please just give me a call and I'll come back for that if necessary. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your understanding. All right. Honourable members, these are the apologies. Do you accept the apologies? Apologies accepted. Thank you very much. We now move to presentation by the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, thank you very much for the opportunity. If the Chairperson would allow, I would like to introduce the team. My name is Omega Shalembe. I am the Acting Director General in the absence of our DG, who's traveling internationally. I am accompanied by the rest of senior management of the department, whom we have invited today. I would allow them to introduce themselves quickly, Chairperson. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Joy Masemula. I'm the CFO.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Farhad Osman, Chief Director, Strategic Planning and Monitoring. Thanks.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Tinyi Kongobeni, the EDG for ICT Infrastructure.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Thuli Manzini, DDG, responsible for Governance and Administration in the Department of Telecommunications.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Tanya Birkus. I'm the Director, Human Resource Administration.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, good morning. My name is Nongobela Jordan. I'm DDG International, the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services.
You.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Renee Lulanga from DTPS SOC Oversight.
Thanks. Thank you, ma'am. If you may raise your voice, please.
Morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Rebolang Soldat. I'm from DTPS Finance Director, Accounts and Budgets.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Jeanette Morwane. I'm the Acting DDG for Information Society Development at the DTPS. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may then proceed with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. I understand perhaps one other member of our delegation will be joining us a little bit late. I think the flight was delayed.
Okay.
But we are ready to make the presentation.
If
I may just spell out how, Chair, we are going to run this presentation with your permission. The CFO is going to run through the numbers or the financial information that we have submitted, and the Chief Director, Strategic Planning and Monitoring, will run through the performance information. I will then request my colleague, DDG Infrastructure, to run through SA Connect related information. And then I'll come back and run through the support and around update. And then we will conclude, Chairperson, in that order. Thank you very much. CFO.
Thank you, Chair. I will take you through the second quarter financial performance for the department. The overall performance for the department in terms of expenditure at the end of second quarter, we're sitting at 45.4%, and we'll notice that for administration there was an overspending there due to a COE budget, because the adjustment, cost of living adjustment was paid for SMS. It was paid in the second quarter. For non-SMS, it was paid in the first quarter. And then, and we also paid the Microsoft software license, and we budgeted lower than the amount that was charged. And then Program 2, which is ICT International Affairs, there was an overspending there due to the exchange rate variance when we were paying the international membership fees. And in the policy branch, There's a saving of about 8.6 million there. The saving is mainly due to the consultants that were not appointed, because some of the work in the policy branch, it was done internally, and there was no need to contract any consultants. And program four, SOE oversight, there was a saving of about 2 million there, also reduction in the consultants as well. And then in the infrastructure support, there was a saving of about 213.4 million due to the SA Connect project that did not, we did not spend. And also the expenditure for the cybersecurity hub, it was not paid in the first quarter as yet. And then, Chair, I will take you through the expenditure per economic classification. And the compensation of employees, there was a saving of 48, no, the expenditure is sitting at 48%, which is lower than the norm of about 50%, due to there were two posts that were not, that are not filled, the DDG policy and DDG international affairs in the first quarter. And then goods and services, 12% was the expenditure at the end of quarter two, and due to the mainly due to the SA Connect project. And then transfers and subsidy, we're sitting at 68% overspending due to the household, the leave gratuities, and as well as the transfers to the international organization, variance exchange rate as well. And then payment of financial assets, it's only 22,000 overspending there. And then payment for capital asset, 66% was spent there due to the the purchasing of the computers. We replaced the computers of the department, and also there was a delay, though, also on the purchase of a vehicle for the executive authority of the department. And the narrative, Chair, it's what I've just alluded to. And on the transfers, on transfers to foreign governments and international organizations, as I've alluded, the overspending is due to the exchange rate variance. And then to NEMISA, 35 million was transferred by the end of second quarter. And then to USASA, 35.4, the actual transfer to NEMISA was 50 million, which is 59% of the total transfer. And then to USASA, 53% of the transfer was transferred. And then to CENTEC for dual illumination, 193 million was transferred, which is 100%. And then to CENTEC again for migration of digital signals, we transferred 53 million, which also is 100% of the allocation. And then to USEF, we've transferred 52%. And to SAPO for the broadcasting digital migration, we've transferred 50%. And then to USEF for the broadcasting digital migration, 50% of the transfers was transferred. And then in total, 68% of the transfers was actually effected. So you will see that we were on par in terms of the transfers by the end of second quarter. And then, Chair, if I may just, on the, there was a requirement that we also present on the shiftings and the environments. I must indicate that there were no shiftings and environments in the first, in the second quarter, but then shiftings that were done were only effected during the third quarter. Thank you, Chair.
DDG. If I could just, in terms of the department's quarter two performance, if I could speak to this table and what the numbers mean. The department for quarter two committed to a total of 23 quarter two targets that it needed to achieve, of which it managed to achieve 20 of them, which meant that three of the targets were not achieved, and that gave us an 87% performance achievement as at the end of quarter two. In terms of the third column, in terms of the quality targets fully achieved, just to run through what those numbers mean, for program one, we had two quality targets that were fully achieved, and those two refer to are in line with the revision of the organizational structure that the department is currently undertaking. In line with that project, we were able to analyze the employee qualifications and experience, which was a commitment for quarter two. And also, the department undertook an employee culture and climate survey in 2016, and we are using, in this financial year, we're implementing the relevant interventions stemming from the recommendations of that survey. And the target is to have 50% of those implemented by quarter two, and that was achieved as well. So that's the two. In terms of program two, ICT International Affairs, there's six that targets that they fully achieved. Those six targets largely refer to the development and consultation and tabling of relevant country positions at relevant forums, as well as in program three, they achieved five targets. Those targets largely relate to the drafting of priority bills, and for the quarter, the department managed to achieve the commitments related to the ECA, the Postal Services Act, and the INAC bill, which included the conclusion of the CS and so forth, as well as the department managed to obtain approval or cluster approval of the ICT SMME strategy, the e-strategy, and the e-government strategy. And in terms of the five targets that we achieved for Program 4, your ICT Enterprise Development SOC Oversight Branch, those relate to the developing the mandates for the state IT company and the state ICT infrastructure company, as well as facilitating the post-bank licensing and development of quarterly state of SOC reports. That's your oversight reports. In the last program, that's program five, the two targets that we were able to achieve relate to the monitoring of the operation of the cybersecurity hub and preparation for WRC 19. In terms of the next column, the next two columns where we partially achieved or we did not achieve those three targets, I can just refer you to the next page, the next slide, please. The three targets in question that we were not able to achieve, they relate also, the first one to, in program one, related to the organizational structure. What was also supposed to happen in quarter two was to do job evaluations for the newly created posts and the revised jobs. For this to have happened, we would have had to have a structure that would have already been approved and informed these newly created posts. But due to delays in the project as a whole, it has a knock-on effect on this quarterly target, as we have the functional structure which is yet to be approved by Minister. But we have made substantial progress. The service delivery improvement plan has been done. We have a functional structure that is just pending Minister's approval, following which we'll do consultation and finalize the structure. In terms of the work study analysis, we already have concluding the appointment of service provider, which will then also inform the job evaluation and so forth. So that's being prioritized for quarter three. In terms of the next target that we didn't achieve is in program two. This relates to securing partnerships in line with the ICT SMME strategy. Here, the bulk of the work was done. It relates to the e-commerce hub. Positioning SAPO as an e-commerce hub, we had to do a business case in consultation with SAPO. That was done. It's just the approval that that did not happen by the close of the quarter, but that's being prioritized in this quarter as we speak. And the last one is the big one of broadband. That's the one that we obviously didn't achieve. We should have actually connected 1,000 by 30th September, 1,000 of the 2,700 identified sites. Quarter one had a 200 target, and quarter two another 800. So I think there's been challenges there, and that I think the CFO alluded to the issues or the impact it had on the budget or the lack of spending thereof. But we have made substantial progress in terms of the fact that there's a master service agreement signed with DTPS, CETA, and BBI, as well as in terms of connectivity, as well as infrastructure-related and service-related issues. But I think this will be covered in greater detail by the DDG infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you, DG Chairperson. We came to the committee to provide a detailed update on the implementation of the SA Connect about 3 months ago. So we'll just provide an update since then. We at that stage we reported that the department had signed the master service agreement between CETA and BBI. Since then, CETA has connected two sites as a proof of concept, just also evaluate some of the issues that need to be streamlined as we go to the bigger implementation, those in the Eastern Cape. And furthermore, looking at the BBI, Broadband Infraco, they are finalizing the procurement issues. They have finalized the process to provide connectivity between cities and towns, because that's where the huge backhaul capacity is required. And that was, they issued a request for information to all the players in the sector and received the information. And based on that, we're able to analyze the gaps and decide where the government needs to intervene and expand the infrastructure. So that part has been concluded. We're just waiting for the award process. And that's all waiting for the next stage, where it's looking at the last mile connectivity to take the infrastructure to the government facilities. There, we also follow the procurement process. We issued a tender around September, and the process of evaluation is underway. There were requests by the potential bidders for an extension, and we initially intended to finalize by November, and we worked very hard. I think we are almost finalizing that process. And to address the delays on the project, because the approach is that there will be multiple service providers that will be appointed in the different district municipalities to ensure that they simultaneously start the connectivity in these areas and try to make up for the lost time in terms of the connectivity. And then on the next slide, so there has been a reduction on the budget that has been allocated for the SA Connect as part of the adjustment. Initially, it was 411 million that's been allocated in the current financial year, and the plan was to connect about 2,700 government sites. And then we informed that there will be 139 million that will be reduced from that budget, and that has necessitated that we review the number of facilities to be connected to just about 2,000 facilities, 2,071. And then there's also a planned reduction of the budget in the following, in the 18-19 year. Initially, it was 703 million that was allocated, and we'll have connected additional 1,718 sites. And we'll have also, that money will have been used to also provide the maintenance of the 2,700 sites that will have been connected in the 17-18 year. So because of the reduction, it limits the number of additional sites that we need to connect to about 397, because we'll still need to maintain the 2,071 sites that will have been connected. And overall, there's been that reduction in the budget will reduce the number of sites that will be connected over the MTF period to about 2,868 sites. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will then run through the update on the SAPO turnaround. As part of the department's role, we both oversee and monitor the performance of the post office, but we also support them as part of their initiatives to effect the turnaround. The turnaround of the post office, or the turnaround strategy of the post office, is premised on several focus areas. The first one is that on the delivery of the social mandate. The main challenge with the social mandate is that the postal outlets that are in remote and unviable areas lack financial support to deliver the universal service obligation. The second challenge is that there is inadequate regulatory enforcement leading to the encroachment in the reserved postal market. In mitigation as a department, we have reviewed the postal policy as part of the integrated ICT white paper in order to reposition SAPO in the digital era. We've also had engagements with ICASA with the view to the relaxation of the universal service obligation targets, particularly in the event that that is still not funded, as well as asking them to enforce regulatory compliance as a result of encroachment by other players in the reserved service area. The second focus area has to do with cost reduction and the promotion of efficient utilization of resources. The challenge in the post office here is that there is generally a very high operational cost component. As a result, their expenditure generally exceeds their revenue. Part of that expenditure is made up of the labor cost, which constitutes 60% of total cost. As part of the mitigation, we have been assisting the post office in the implementation of cost reduction initiatives. I think as they will present here, they will show that their cost expenditure has reduced, but unfortunately not enough to cover or to be fully covered by their revenue. We have also assisted in the process to optimize the property portfolio, including the approval for the sale of non-core assets and imploring the post office to develop a property strategy that is aligned to the broader organizational repositioning for the future. The third focus area for the turnaround strategy is the growth of revenue and revenue diversification. The challenge here is largely to do with the declining mail volumes, which has also been compounded by the loss of customers following the previous prolonged illegal strike in the post office. As part of mitigation, we are assisting the post office to regain the lost customers. We are also leading and facilitating initiatives to support the post office to grow and implement an e-commerce platform and strategy. And we are also assisting the post office to secure government business opportunities, for example, the social grants payments. Another focus area for the turnaround strategy is that on funding challenges. Chairperson, the post office balance sheet is reliant largely on debt funding, which they raised last year to the tune of 3.7 billion. As part of the mitigation, we have supported SAPO's funding applications through the 2017 MTF, through the 2017 adjustment process, as well as the 2018 MTF process. We have also assisted in securing funding from the commercial banks. As a result, they raised 3.7 from banks last year. As part of the adjustment budget, they have been allocated 3.7 billion in terms of the adjustment process. We have also provided support in securing government guarantees and borrowings from the commercial banks. We are currently in discussion with National Treasury on the utilization of the 3.7 billion. The initial indications are that Treasury wishes that the whole 3.7 be utilized to settle the debts with the banks. However, we are mindful that the post office still has cash flow challenges, which require that they invest in key initiatives that will help turn around. So we are looking at either utilizing a portion of this 3.7 for targeted investments in turnaround initiatives, or alternatively, then the post office will still have to raise other funding as a result of its cash flow requirements. we made is the 2018 MTF application for the post office for both the universal service obligation as well as the critical infrastructure, particularly IT investment that they needed. However, no allocation was made for those initiatives. The last focus area for the turnaround strategy has to do with leadership stabilization. The post office in the past was beset with historical labor instability as well as governance challenges. Those have since been managed with the assistance of the department. Outstanding historical liabilities to labor have been settled as part of the loans from the banks last year. The creditors, outstanding creditors as well, were paid as part of those loans. We have also assisted in the appointment of the board as well as three most senior executives in the post office, the group CEO, CFO, and the COO chairperson. We continue to monitor the turnaround, and as part of the preparation for the corporate plan for next year, we are imploring the post office to come up with a particular initiatives that will assist with revenue generation, which is the critical challenge at the moment. Chairperson, that brings us to the end of our presentation. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member, I'm now going to open the floor for interrogation of the presentation. Okay, number one, before, yeah, Honourable Member McLaughlin, I was going to say before you leave, Honourable Member Shin, yes, yeah, mustn't forget this one. Honourable Member Shin, welcome to this committee. Honourable Members, in terms of the rules, Honourable Member is not a member of this committee, but she is allowed to participate. All right, thanks. Honourable Member Shopestoy, Honourable Member, yes, I'm coming to you, madam. Honourable Member.
I was requesting that we reduce the echo, and I'm actually freezing.
Okay, so you're not raising your hand to ask. Okay, fine. Can I start afresh? Honourable Member, Honourable Member, there's some. Okay, it was Honourable Member Shopestole. Now it's Honourable Member McLaughlin, Honourable Member Snukwanyane, Honourable Member Manana, Honourable Member Shin. Yes, in that order. Sorry for this.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the delegation for their presentation. If I could just ask a general question, maybe you could just address us as to why it is that you need 11 people to come and give us this presentation. Obviously, it costs money to bring 11 people to Parliament, and only three of you have spoken, so if you could just give me an answer on that, please. Then, if I could refer to pages 3 and 8 of your slides that you've given us, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect, in a sense, because if I look, for example, on page 3, policy research and capacity development, you've spent 36% of your budget, but according to slide 8, for the same thing, you've achieved 100% of your target. Now, either you've shortchanged somebody along the line here, or you've made a huge saving, which would be a great thing. But I'd like to know from you what your explanation is for this, because obviously when I look at this, it seems like there's a bit of a disconnect. The same applies again to ICT enterprise development and SOE oversight. There again, we're saying 100% achieved in this quarter, but you've spent 53.7% of your budget. Now, that percentage spent, I realize, may refer to the whole year, and your targets are only for half the year, but if you could just clarify that, if that is in fact the case. Then, infrastructure support. Here we're way down, 213 million rand behind And I'm just a bit concerned, are we going to get this money spent within this financial year? Do you think what you've got planned in the quarter we're in now, as well as the fourth quarter, is it going to end up with us hitting the target we need to hit there, or are we going to be sitting with a huge amount of unspent funds again, with the obvious consequences that brings about? Then on your slide number 4, I always had a concern again with only a 12% spend in goods and services. Once again, I understand that when you contract for things, often it doesn't even give you even spending across your four quarters of the year. But if you could just unpack it a little bit for us and tell us what's going to be happening, because we've got two quarters gone already and only 12% spent. So we've got to spend the remaining 88% in two quarters as well. Is that going to happen? And then your payment to financial assets, although you say it's only 22,000 expenditure, there's no budget amount there or projected budget. Could you tell us why that is? Is this unbudgeted expenditure? Is it unauthorized expenditure? What is the story with that payment to financial assets? And then lastly, slide 9. The last item on that particular slide, project manage the rollout of the broadband connectivity. You're saying the challenge is your transfer of funds by Treasury has not yet happened. That's a bit concerning, because if that's what's holding up this thing, that you haven't got the money from Treasury, what follow-up are you doing on this? It's a pity the Treasury isn't here today, because they could maybe give us some idea of what the problem is there. Are they waiting for you to do something before this money comes? Are you waiting for them? What follow-ups are happening? Can you just give us some idea of what is causing this? And then, because I get concerned when I see things like will be prioritized and has been prioritized, because it's just nice speak for what hasn't happened yet and you're hoping it's going to happen. So please just give us some clarity on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Member McLaughlin. Honourable Member Mukwanyane.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My first question, I think my colleagues already addressed, because I also had a question around the issue of policy research and capacity development, the relationship between the two statements of 100% and 36.3, so I will pass that one. And then on this expenditure per economic classification on goods and services, spending 12%, extreme underspending, even though I think when you spoke, you spoke of savings, but I think it's a serious underspending. I do acknowledge the text, which explains all the reasons why, but then my question would be, because usually, you know, with many departments, you find that under goods and services, it's a big problem of overspending. But this underspending, are these the only things that fall under these goods and services that are mentioned here? Yes, because if you spend 12% because of, you know, there were delays and so on, and just to get a sense of whether these are the only things that are under goods and services. And then on the transfers, foreign governments and international organizations will spend 102%. You did mention that because of foreign currency and so on. But the two things, the dual illumination and migration of digital signals, where you spend 100%, what does this mean? Are these once off, or does that mean that's it? The budget is spent. The 100% of the budget is already spent there. I think I would want to.
Thank you. To end there.
Thank you very much.
You sure you don't have another question? Thank you. Honourable Member introduction, to be followed by Honorable Member Gwabaza. Sorry, Honorable Member Shin. May we have Honorable Member Manana coming in?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I've been covered by my colleagues and some of the questions. But I wanted to get clarity with regards to the consultants. Do you want to tell us that we have budgeted for consultants initially, despite the fact that there was a directive that we need not to use consultants any longer, but as this department, you opted to budget for it? The second issue is with regards to the compensation of employees, where we are indicating that there are two DGGs that were not, their posts were not filled during the second quarter. What is the situation as of now? The third question, Chairperson, is with regards to the transfers and subsidies. Are you really doing oversight over those transfers? We did not get information that these people are not utilizing the money that we given to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My questions start on slide 9 and then going on to 11 and 12. Regarding the broadband rollout, we have here as a quarter two target under that. Well, first of all, you say that the implementation of phase one is 2,700 sites. Then under the quarter two target, you say connectivity to an additional 800 sites identified. Project managers and monitors, does that mean that those 800 sites have been connected? Then I also wanted to query what the transfer delay to BBI was about from Treasury, why that has been done. And my query around the numbers of sites connected for SA Connect is that on slide 11 you say CETA has connected two sites as a proof of concept. Now, is it two sites or is it 800 sites out of the 2,700? Can you please explain to me, because I surely you just haven't only connected two as a pilot project when there's huge deadline arising. And do you have any chance at all of connecting the 2,700 sites that you want to by the end of the financial year? That's March, I think, is that target? Then on the SAPO 3.7 billion rand bailout, if I can call it that, was initially to settle the debts of the banks, but now you're talking about there might be some portion of it invested to generate, I presume, interest income. Can you please explain how that is going to be, would the interest generated from those investments be more than the interest that you would be paying to the banks? You know, would you gain more interest than you would be paying to the banks to service that loan? And if you could give us some idea of what other ideas that the post office has to secure extra income. Because my concern is that while you were saying that we want to the post office to secure more government business, the other government departments actually need to go through the PFMA to give post office business. Is this going to be done in line with the PFMA? Will it be a competitive process? And will there be any adjustments to the way SAPO operates to enable it to compete with the private sector if it's going to get government business?
Honourable Member Gwabaza.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I go to slide 4? Perhaps, Chair, before I go to my questions, I think it is important for this committee to make this point that it's a general statement, not only to this department. It's a general statement that this committee must make that irregular, wasteful, and unauthorized expending, under expenditure, over expenditure that is not clearly explained, can no longer be tolerated, not only by this parliament, by this committee, but by parliament as a whole. Let that be clear. The country is sitting in a very difficult fiscal and economic environment. What is going to decisively shift us out of this position is efficient and productive expenditure by departments and their entities. So we want to send this message loud and clear. And that as this committee, we have the right to recommend to Parliament to react in a particular manner to any department and its entities which continues with irregular expenditure, unauthorized, wasteful expenditure, underspending, overspending unnecessarily, shifts environments willy-nilly. All of those things jeopardize service delivery to the society. All of these things throw money down the drain. Money that has gone very, very scarce. So let this message be very clear. Second, we are going to watch very closely how departments and their entities promote the SMMEs and cooperatives in the spirit of getting into the process of inclusive economic growth so that all of our people benefit from the economy. That collaboration between department and entities and emerging businesses and cooperatives must be clean of all corruption, be transparent as our constitution demands, and be fair. We will not accept excuses. Because part of the reason we are seated in this position is because the economy is concentrated in a few. It's got to be spread out to the majority. And government will not be a spectator in doing that, because once government becomes an spectator, our people suffer. The 30 days payment has got to be strictly adhered to, because if you don't, you are killing the SMEs, you're killing the cooperatives. And the whole objective of an inclusive economic growth gets defeated. Third, Chairperson, we will no longer tolerate public servants and public representatives who continue to do business with government, who employs them. Cannot be employed by government, you cannot be employed by parliament as a public representative and do business with the same government. Conflict of interest. So let that message be clear. Now, on slide 4, the payment of financial assets, there are blank spaces there, and then the 22 and blank. Which gives the impression that there was no budget for payment of financial assets. And that 22, some of it is in brackets, is not very clear. So if you could again clarify that in very clear terms so that we understand what you mean. Two critical posts unfilled. How long have they been vacant and when are they going to be filled? Very critical posts. We raise this question because non-filling of critical posts results in poor performance and poor service delivery. The next slide, 6. In some instances, you have done 100% transfers. In other instances, it looks like staggered transfers. 59 and 53 and 52 and 50 and 50. Please explain that. Why in some instances you've done 100% transfer and in some instances it looked like staggered transfers of funds. On slide 14. You are saying that you seek to sell non-core assets. If you could explain to us what are these non-core assets and to what extent are they eating away much-needed money that would otherwise serve the department better and give better services. Slide 15. I think I have the same worry with my colleague who wanted clarity about that 3.7 billion when Treasury says pay off your loans to the commercial banks, and you are suggesting you will use some of it to do that and then use some of it for operational costs. I would like to understand whether in the first instance are there negotiations going on between yourselves and the lenders just about that. and what would be the implications should they agree that you pay them some of the money and you keep some for your own operational costs. Linked to that, Chairperson, is exactly how much does the department need for operational costs going forward? Because that also, if you pay off your debts and you don't have money in the kitty for operational costs, you need to be aware of how much it is that should be your operational cost per year going forward. So clarify that to us. Thank you very much. Oh, lastly, social grants. Give us a very clear answer. There is now an understanding between yourselves and SASSA. Give us a clear answer. Are you up to the game now? No hiccups and so on. Come the time when you are required to give these services. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just something knows there to work it out. I'm sorry I don't have the annual report, so once again I'm asking questions slightly blindly without a balance sheet. So if I understand correctly, the $3.7 billion is paid off existing debt, so there will be no interest swap or change in your income statement going forward, so the existing $3.7 pays for other debt will carry on bearing interest. But you still need another $3.5 billion, of which you can raise $3.9 billion, of which $900 million is going to basically not be new interest because there's a $400 million overdraft and $500 million will be paying off debt. So there'll be an additional R3 billion. So by my calculation, there's an additional $270 million in interest for the next year. So after taking the loaning this money, the loss for next year will be R1 billion, effectively, because nothing's changed. You know, you just swap one form of interest for another form of interest. There's no operational change, other than you put some money into capital, which will hopefully make you more efficient. So my question here, effectively, I saw someone and I almost laughed. They can sort out problems in 7 days. I have to tell two stories about them, Chair, to get this into context. One, I was in England about 7 years ago, and I sat on a bus behind two old ladies. And the one old lady said, "You know, Doreen, this country is falling apart. I sent a letter to Maggie in Brighton. It took 2 days to get there." And I just laughed to myself, because even a few years ago, there's no chance we can get a letter anywhere in South Africa in 2 days through the post office. Then I can also tell the members of the department that are here that I've been in business for most of my life, and I'm still involved in many businesses. I don't think one of my businesses has posted a letter in at least 10 years. Despite the fact that the best way to get anything read in South Africa would be to get a letter, because nobody reads emails, etc. So the opportunity for the post office is the highest. And you're not going to turn this organization around until you change that fundamental thing. You're going to spend all the money you like on marketing. I posted for the stock exchange. Sorry, I lied to you. I did post letters. The stock exchange require post letters to shareholders. So last December, I posted it on the 15th of December. It was at the post office on the 15th of December. I eventually received that letter in March. Of the 3 months, 3.5 months later, stamped 27th of January. So I have no idea what happened in the post office for almost 2 months. So you can't turn an organization around. Their job is to post a letter, and you can't post a letter. So unless you do something fundamentally different, you may as well close down now. So my question to the department, based on those two little stories, is what's going to happen differently other than you're wasting money and you're digging a bigger and bigger hole, getting more interest? We've got enough, what is it, $241 million, I said, in interest coming to you next year with no change. What are you going to do differently? Because if you don't do something differently, you may as well just close down right now.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I would like, even if you don't have the answer today, you can send it in writing. How good are you doing with the payment of SMEs in within 30 days? Now that you are going to be dealing with SASSA, you know, I am just like the previous speaker. I'm very worried because I come from the rural areas in Bushbuck Ridge, Akonhoek Post Office. When I need to do something in that post office, I have to make sure maybe that I bring a check, because you stand in those queues until you can nearly fall or go outside and come back again. You know, the queues are alarming. What are you going to do with that, senior? I actually asked to speak to the postmaster, but I didn't find any joy in the explanations that they were giving. But I also want to know that if you are going to deal with SASSA, are you going to use consultants? And who are those consultants? Thank you.
I just want to apologize. I've read both presentations already, so I've jumped the gun apparently. It's more post office related, my question then. Sorry, Chair, I know I've just walked in. I was at the police committee. I just had one question, and I'm not sure whether it was answered earlier on or whether the question was posed, and that is to the post office itself, the telecom. We haven't had it yet. Oh, okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you.
There's been an over expenditure there. I know that PFMA does allow a 2%, you know, over expenditure, and yours is at 68. It's far beyond the 2%. Am I right, Madam? I just want you to explain to us, where did you get this money from? Because the one that you use for the over expenditure, the difference. Where did you get it from? And because we'd like to see the environments allowed by the PFMA, but also there is a procedure to be followed there. Anything above 8%, then there's a violation of the PFMA. So it's just that this one is not given in a percentage. What percentage is this? Can anyone help me? But you should have in your document. Transfers and subsidies, spending, yes, instead of 550.1 million, you say 551.4 million. Yes, that's the difference that I want you to explain to us. It's possible that maybe it's legally, you know, done so, but we just need to understand that. Né? And then on page, can we look at page? Page 14. Page 14. There's somewhere where you say you're assisting. I think is it revenue growth? Will assist support to secure government business opportunities now? Who is it? Is it this one? Okay, you see where you say you are assisting. It's not helping us. It's vague, very vague. Because you have been lagging behind in terms of the implementation of some of your programs. So when you say you're assisting, tell us exactly what you're doing. Because in the previous meeting we said, can you submit an acceleration plan? I know we didn't get that plan. We were deliberately saying acceleration plan so that you can think and actually work faster due to time constraint. But also, the summer where you lost infrastructure support. Where is infrastructure support? Okay. I think somewhere 213,499,000 saving due to South African Connect project. Ne? Now, have you learned something about where you incur a saving and then the National Treasury, because it has got power, it takes that money, the saved money, for something else, and it doesn't even negotiate with you. They just say surrender the saving. Have you not learned that if you don't use your budget, you are going to lose it, until the fact that you need more money? But because you, in terms of your implementation, I don't know whether you have capacitated staff members to implement, because there's nothing disturbing like you have a good plan, you have a budget, but it's not implemented, and money is taken back to by Treasury. And you can't blame Treasury, because it is a budget principle. If money is not used, it has got to be taken back to Treasury. Are you not worried that you're losing money? Because you keep saving, and in my mind, you don't even think about it when you implement. You say, if we don't use this money, we're going to lose it, you know, so that you use it. Your budget is going to be reduced because of poor performance and poor implementation. So I think that's what I want you to explain to us. What are you going to do here? And when you say in a turnaround, you say you're assisting. Mm-mm. Please tell us a full story. What are you doing? You know? And then even on your targets, where are the targets? On your targets, ne? All right. Oh no, you did give a story on your targets, because I was saying program one, targets two, and then quarterly targets not achieved is one. 67% percentage. 100, and then you achieve 67. That's too low. We don't want you to focus on who is doing what. We want you to focus on what you should do and push that what you are supposed to do happens. Because it's not about you, it's about the people who are supposed to benefit. Those departments who are supposed to benefit from your service. It's not about you. And those departments are stuck because of poor movement by this department. So it's not about, I don't want you to think, be myopic in your thinking. We've got to look at it from a bigger picture. From a bigger, yes. Let's look at the bigger picture and then fit ourselves in there. Problem is, unfortunately, your department impacts negatively on other departments. Am I right? Yeah, exactly. So you can imagine, you're sitting there every day, you're sitting there every morning, you wake up, you go to work every morning. Then you're supposed to every day to be productive, every day, in the best interest of the people of South Africa. But it's not happening. What is the problem with you? Maybe I must ask you, what is the problem with you? Because the people out there, if you can tell them there's money, but you have not used it, the money has gone back. Can you see? It takes this program even back, even the nation building back. Because you're not using the money that you've been given. Doesn't matter if you've got limited resources, but you must use them. At least let's see. You can't come and want bailout. But when we look at the impact you've made, there's no impact. So that is the problem that I think we have. And then the bailout, I think it was a bailout of money to the of budget to the tune of 3.7 billion. Am I right? Yes. Where have you used that money? You see, you want bailout? When you get money, you don't use it, it goes back. What is that? I just want us to look at it, simplify it. Here's money is allocated. You don't use it. It goes back. You ask for a bailout. What is that? What arithmetic is that? Doesn't make sense. We depend on you to assist with this nation building and in your area of work. And then on page 15, funding challenges reliant on debt funding. No, yeah, there's something that is, you know, okay. Appointment of the board and the three most senior executives on the leadership column. Appointment of the board and the three most senior executives. And then I know there's a saving on compensation. Yeah? But we're still talking appointment of the board. You know, you're not appointing. There's a saving. That money is going to be taken if you don't use. And you still want to appoint a board. How long does it take you to appoint a board? When did you identify the need to appoint a board? But also I want to caution you. On your appointment of the board, I don't mind you appointing anybody, but that person must have a skill and must be professional, you know? The friends of the organization, can you wait a bit? It has not helped us. Friends of friends, it has not helped this nation. Appoint skilled people so that there can be a movement. You find that this car is stuck because there are no skilled people to assist us to push and make sure that we deliver in this program. All right, over to you for your responses.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Sorry, Chair. I know I'm interrupting the proceedings. I'm just coming, but I've got one very important question for the department.
Okay, please ask.
Can I do that? Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence, Chair. I'd like to know what are the challenges and weaknesses you got, because we find that the post office itself, under your control, is not able to roll out or pay these social grants and things. Can you tell us what are the weaknesses at the post office or the challenges that they face that they cannot do it? And if that is the case, what are you going to do as a department to ensure that something is done in the near future so that we, the post office, will be able to actually distribute these grants? And I think it's part of your mandate. Thank you.
Okay. Over to you, Esse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all the members for the questions. Let me start off, or first let me say we will distribute the questions amongst ourselves so that you get detailed and relevant information from the relevant program managers. Let me start off with the first question on why such a big delegation to this committee. Our reading of the invitation, Chairperson, indicated that we're not only dealing with just financial matters, but the committee expected us to talk ourselves through our performance as the department for the two quarters. We therefore felt that all the relevant program managers must be available to assist the committee talk through their achievement or non-achievement of their targets. That was the reason, Chairperson, for the delegation. There were two questions relating to 36% and 50% spent, and yet we have achieved 100%. This essentially reflects the expenditure against the total available for the whole year. That's why it's 36 and 50%, vis-a-vis the achievement of quarterly targets. The targets were for the quarter, and we have achieved in those two instances all the relevant targets for those two quarters. there was also a question on 12% spent on goods and services. Chairperson, we wish to indicate that part of our goods and services allocation relates to the broadband rollout project, and that is where there has not been sufficient movement on the expenditure side, Chairperson, hence the 12%. If one were to eliminate that broadband project from the numbers will reflect correctly for the two quarters in question. There was some other question on the payment of financial assets, 22,000. I will allow the CFO to deal with that one. There was then another question on transfer of funds has not happened from Treasury. That's relating to the broadband project. My colleague will deal with that one. Then there was a question about 100% spent on transfers for dual illumination and digital signals migration. Chairperson, at the beginning of every financial year, we enter into a payment schedule in agreement with the National Treasury, depending on the funds requirements of each project. These two, the dual illumination and digital signals migration, are technical and infrastructure-related projects whose funding is essentially required upfront to perform the related services. So we agreed with Treasury that funding would be transferred in totality in the first two quarters. On the transfers and subsidies, are we really doing oversight on those transfers? Chairperson, we do perform the oversight on the entities generally, but particularly on the transfers themselves. We are required in terms of the Treasury regulations to make sure that we monitor the utilization of those transfers, particularly to ensure that they are utilized for the intended purpose. So before we make a transfer, we would at least make inquiries, and in relevant instances, we will also visit certain projects to see that the money has been spent on those projects and that they are indeed running. There were then several questions, Chair, to the broadband project, which I will leave for my colleagues. Then there's the issue of the $3.7 billion allocation to the post office. Let me start off by saying that perhaps I might have not come out quite clearly as to what we are intending to do with part of that allocation. When I said we are proposing to invest a portion thereof, Chairperson, I didn't mean we want to invest it in financial markets per se, but we are looking at investing in critical infrastructure, which will facilitate the turnaround of the post office. We have a list of such items for critical infrastructure that we have discussed with the post office. These relate to retail point of sale systems, track and trace systems, and equipment, mail centers automation, e-commerce, financial systems improvements, revenue projects, IT infrastructure, and fleet and transport systems. These are all the particular investments that we believe will facilitate the required efficiencies in the post office, as well as the delivery of new products and services by the post office, thereby contributing to the diversification and revenue growth. Chairperson, I wish to indicate that, yes, indeed, on government business, we have assisting the post office. We have visited in the last year 21 government departments, which are critical to the post office, trying to open doors for them. But it is understood, Chairperson, that the post office will still have to comply in terms of a competitive process in soliciting that business. So it's not a preferential way whatsoever, but we were sort of opening the doors and assisting in presenting the value proposition of the post office. But in all those departments, the post office then follows the normal procurement process in seeking business. Chairperson, we've noted the messages relating to irregular, wasteful, fruitless, unauthorized, over or under expenditure not being tolerated, and as a department, we are on a continuous basis improving our controls to ensure that we detect such early enough so that we can prevent them. And in the event that they do occur, we give effect to remedial action. We also fully subscribe, Chairperson, to the promotion of SMMEs and cooperatives. And as a department, we have just published the SMME strategy, which has been approved by Cabinet. This is essentially a way which we have identified to unlock and develop SMMEs, particularly in our sector. If not the only one, I think we are one of the few departments that have developed such a strategy for the promotion of SMMEs. We again, Chairperson, agree with the message of clean departments free of corruption, transparent and fair. We also agree with the fact that public servants should not do business with the state. We, as part of our controls, we declare interest every year, and our business interests are scrutinized through the internal processes to make sure that such conflicts do not exist. Chairperson, also there was a question about some transfers being effected 100% and other staggered transfers which have been in the range of 50 or whatever percent. As I have indicated, Chair, we do enter at the beginning of a financial year into negotiations with Treasury as to how these funds would be transferred to relevant entities depending on the business and project requirements of funds. So in instances where entities indicated that they will require those funds in the first two quarters of the year, given the nature of the projects that they are running, then such funds are made available according to the payment schedule agreed to with National Treasury. Then there was a question about what are the non-core assets that we refer to with respect to the post office. We have encouraged the post office to do a property strategy or a property management strategy. The post office has several properties in its portfolio. Some of them are utilized by itself, some others are not being utilized. We have therefore requested them as part of their strategy to identify which ones are not necessary for the needs of the organization and therefore may need to be disposed, and we have identified those for such disposal. There was again another question on the 3.7 billion as to whether we are in negotiations with the lenders. Indeed, Chairperson, we are in negotiations with the lenders. The picture as it stands currently, if we settle all the loans to the banks currently that the post office has, and we have not been allocated funding for universal service obligations and targeted investments, that implies that the post office will be in the same position financially in terms of its cash flow and will therefore require perhaps to negotiate some loans with the banks. We are therefore discussing with the banks such possibilities and the best way to finance its project. Chairperson, there were then other questions which I think relate more to the post office than the department. For instance, the question about how much exactly do we require for operational costs. We as a department, even though it's a constrained fiscal environment, but are sufficiently provided for our our requirements, and then I think the questions relate more to the post office than the department. Is SAPO up to the game now for the payment of social grants? There has been prolonged discussions between SAPO and SASA, which have been facilitated by the Interministerial Committee on Comprehensive Social Security, to put together this arrangement between SASA and the post office, whereby the post office will deliver and pay social grants. At the moment, there has been signed what they call the implementation protocol, which is a general understanding at a high level that the parties intend to work together. Then the parties are expected to enter into a commercial agreement, which will then spell out exactly what is it that SASA expects SAPO to deliver, and whether SAPO needs to be then put in a financially sound position to deliver those. We are unable to determine how much SAPO requires upfront to give effect to that project, but we will soon get those numbers as soon as the commercial agreements have been finalized. Then, Chairperson, there were questions which the Honourable Member has acknowledged relate to SAPO, those dealing with the 3.7 billion and the numbers of how they are intending to raise funding going forward, and service delivery standards by SAPO. Chairperson, if we can, we could park those until the post office comes in. On the payment of SMMEs within 30 days, I think the CFO can comment on this, but Chairperson, yes, we will be submitting a detailed information to this committee, spelling out how much of the SMMEs are paid within the stipulated time. On what do we mean by assisting the post office, Chairperson? As we indicated, we are trying to open doors, particularly with respect to government departments, for the post office to present its value offerings and proposals to those departments, and then the post office follows the normal procurement processes with those departments. Chairperson, I'm going to allow my colleagues to comment on the other questions, but there was a question on the appointment of boards and savings in the department. The appointment of board members is the function that is performed by the minister, but such board members then serve in the entities in which they have been appointed to. We do not pay the board members as the department, but they are paid by such entities into which they serve. Chairperson, we do agree that members appointed into boards must have relevant skills. We do scrutinize people who are being nominated for serving into these boards for relevant skills, so that they add value into the entities that they are appointed into. Chairperson, I will allow my colleagues to add on some of the questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. With regards to the question, where the Honourable Member indicated that there's a disconnection between the financials and also the performance, for Program 3 and Program 4, as well as Program 5. For Program 3 and 4, the targets for the two quarters, it was to develop the draft bills, and also there were targets regarding the three strategies. All the work was done internally, so the spending, it was minimal, and it was largely on the stakeholder consultation following the gazetting of the strategies. And then with regards to Program 5, the development of the mandates for the state ICT infrastructure company, and the state IT company was also done internally. Hence, there were savings in those projects. And then there was a question regarding the, on slide 4, the 12% spending of the budget, as the acting DG has indicated, SA Connect project is part of goods and services, and hence that's why it's indicating a low, that the spending is low, there is 12%. And then there was a question on the payment of financial assets. Chair, on the financial assets includes households. Households includes the payment of leave gratuities. And according to the budget framework, we are not supposed to budget for those because as people leave, we need to pay them their leave gratuity, and we don't budget for that. And it's as well as the foreign exchange rate variance that will be sitting there as well. Sorry, Chair, it was the bank charges. And then there was also a question in terms of the consultants, whether we did budget for consultants. Chair, with regards to the SA Connect, the initial strategy was that consultants will be utilized to roll out the broadband. However, the DDG infrastructure can also speak to the point more. And then as to the situation regarding the two DDGs vacancy, DDG administration can also allude to that point. Chair, there was also a question regarding the payment of SMMEs within 30 days. We will provide a written answer, an answer in writing with regards to this, but the department do pay within 30 days, except those invoices where there's a dispute that has been lodged on them. And we do have a record where we follow up with the service providers, and we note those. And then, Chairperson, there was also a question regarding the viaments, whether the viaments are within the 8% as required by legislation. Chair, the viaments that we do are within the 8%, and we're mainly on the realignment of the compensation of employees. So those viaments are within the 8% mark. Chair, I think that's all from my side. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. The 551,000 expenditure, the difference, the variance of 1.3 million, it amounts to 0.23% and of the budget, and this is as a result of the exchange rate variance. When we pay for our international membership fees, we don't know by the time Treasury pays how much it's going to cost the department. So in terms of the the variance, that's the difference here. And also, we do projections at the beginning of the financial year. However, we do not get it right, but it's only 1.3 million that was in terms of the variance. And that figure, Chair, you'll see it's still remaining as a variance. However, towards the end of the financial year, or even in the second quarter, when we did when we looked at our variances, then we reprioritized funds within the department. And right now, I cannot say where those funds will be taken from, but as it is right now, it's sitting within Program 2. Thank you, Chair.
CFO, if you don't know where funds were shifted from, but you have overspent, I have a problem with that. Because money was shifted. For you to have to overspend, it means it was shifted. Yeah, but that's fine. Honourable members, follow-up questions? Honourable Member Manana? Honourable Member Shopestole? Honourable Member Sheen? No follow-up questions. All right. We'll take these two follow-up questions, and then we have to move faster. The post office is here. I know you've been dying to meet the post office. The post office is here. Okay.
Chairperson, my questions were not answered. The CFO indicated that these directors will answer those questions. Therefore, they were not answered.
Okay, can you remind her if maybe...
Consultants? Budgeting for the consultants? And the appointment of the DDGs?
Chair, I did address the issue of the consultants.
Okay.
Yes.
I was listening to you. We can even look at the handset. You indicated you. I was listening to you.
Okay. May I request you to repeat your name? And you see that consultation there. You know why it's happening? Because the HOD is not here. So now we must consult, and we must wait for you to consult them, you know? Because I can see you consulting. You're not here. You're supposed to come here ready and just respond to questions like that. Ne? I was looking, arguing amongst yourself. It's not done. It's happening for the first time, but I'm sure we will correct moving forward. That's why the DG must be here. But also on that, you remember you... There's a question I wanted to... My mind is open. It's a question, Oh, you said, in response to Honourable Member McLaughlin's question on why such a big delegation? You know why? We are dealing with appropriations. We follow money, and we want to see value for money. And we know that the PFMA says you've got to use the limited resources, ne? Economically. So that's why you've been asked this question. Because already we see wasteful expenditure. You see, and you don't have your budget. You don't have the budget. You've been bailed out, but we see a big delegation coming here. There's money used there. But also, to be honest, when we write to you, we do indicate areas that you want you to focus on. So our expectation is that you will sit at the department there with your team. But, of course, if the DDG was here, the DG was here. You sit with the DG, and then you feed the DG with responses. And then the DG comes and accounts here. Not all of them. They don't account to us. They account to the DG, and the DG accounts to the minister. But if the minister is not here, because the minister accounts to parliament, if the minister is not here, then the DG. So you can't bring the whole, because there will be a wasteful expenditure there. Whilst you heard, his first question was, how are you dealing with wasteful expenditure, fruitless expenditure? because we want to save the taxpayers' money for the actual service delivery. Ne? Does it make sense? We must all think the same way. There must be alignment of thinking. This government does not have money. So you will then not waste money, because the PFMA says use it economically. There's no money, but use the little that you have economically. So that is the issue. So in future, please don't bring such a big delegation, because there's wasteful expenditure there that we see. All right. Honourable Member Shoppes Tole, you will then respond again. Eh? Maybe she wants you to expand, elaborate on your response. Okay. All right.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just want to make a follow-up on your response on the payments within 30 days. You said you do pay within 30 days, except for those that have got maybe queries. And I just want to plead with all of us to think outside the box and to understand who we are. We are a developmental state, and we have got a past of apartheid and Bantu education. So when people bring the invoices to you, you must also think that you and I have been lucky to be able to calculate. There are many who did not have the opportunity to go to school. They are seeing an invoice for the first time. So as a department, as government, you've got to think, what am I going to do with these clients of mine who are delaying my compliance with the 30 days so that I empower them on how to bring correct invoices so that I can comply? You know, because we are a developmental state, and in a developmental state, government intervenes in the illiteracy and ignorance of the population, especially those who are your client. And you must always, at any material time, remember that our challenge is inequality, joblessness, and poverty. If you delay in paying the small business, they collapse. The 2-3 jobs that they had tried to actually create, that becomes nothing. And we will never deal with poverty as long as jobs are collapsing. So I want us to think, all of us, like South Africans, and be patriotic to our country and our situation. We have got a background of Bantu education. Thank you.
Okay, I just want to, I'm proposing for use of the bail, a part of the portion of the bailout for investment on the infrastructure. We asked National Treasury to ask us why have they paid this, and then they gave us an explanation. In the explanation, they're not talking the same, you're not talking the same language. They're saying that money was used to defray debts by SAPO. Yeah, so I'm trying to say this is misleading, but it's fine. In future, I told you how to prepare to come here. And then, madam, you lost through under expenditure, you lost 411 million to National Treasury, and this is part of what we deal with. Money that was retrieved, that was not used, and retrieved and reallocated to other programs. Now, tell us, how are you going to avoid losing this 213499 saving on your concept, on the SA Connect project? Because that project must take off the ground. But how are you going to avoid losing it? Because if you lose it, that's going to take us way back again. So if you can, yeah. what happened, because between ourselves and yourselves in the previous, we said, can you give us an accelerated plan? What happened? Because we asked you and you agreed. I don't remember us getting that accelerated plan. I told you our intention. Our intention was to make you move faster. So as you start to conceptualize the accelerated plan, we will start there to look at all the low-hanging fruits and then plan on, you know, link them with this accelerated plan so that at least you go a mileage before the end of this financial year with the budget that you have been given, because there's no movement. I repeat, we called you, we found that there was no movement. We've called you again, there's still no movement. So what do you want us to do? Must we talk to the minister to apply consequence management on the DG because you are failing to work? Because indeed, you're failing to work. He takes responsibility of the whole department. So as you fail to work, you must know that the impact that you're going to make. Consequence management on the DG, and you'll be complaining about money now that is not being used because the DG has been set. I want you to think, you know, look at things from a broader perspective. Don't just look at yourself like this. Look at the impact you're making, because we also want to see the impact on the budget that has been allocated. So if you can, yeah. On the treasury transfers, you say there has been slow transfers from the treasury. Am I right? Am I right? There's an under expenditure because of withheld transfers. Did I understand you correctly? Please correct me before I go.
We will request our DDG infrastructure to talk through the issues relating to this project broadband and the negotiations they've been having with Treasury to effect transfer to the identified public entities to do the job. And what are the delays there?
The negotiations can only be based on a cash flow projection that you make on your infrastructure plan and your infrastructure implementation.
Talk to that, Chair.
Okay. Please tell us what happened to your cash projection and your infrastructure plan.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I'll address the infrastructure-related questions, but I'll start with the one you just asked now on the issue of the transfer. So when we came earlier to brief the committee together with Treasury, we had submitted a request to reclassify the funds allocated to this program from goods and services to a transfer. And we're given a detailed cash flow breakdown and when we intended to have the transfers. But Treasury has since come back to the department indicating that they now recommend that instead of doing a transfer, doing the classification as a transfer, the department should just pay the entities from goods and services as per invoice that comes through. And the initial thinking around the transfer was also to enable the entities to plan much quicker and execute. But now it's just that they'll have to plan, execute, and then submit an invoice to the department, and the department pays. So that's where now the issue is with the issue of the transfer. And on the issue of whether we'll be able to spend the money before the end of the year, the initial plan was to appoint a single service provider responsible for rollout throughout the country. But as we indicated in the last meeting, we have since changed that approach, and the approach is to appoint multiple service providers across the country. And that will also scale up or increase the capacity of the service providers to do the rollout, because they then focus on the small areas that have been designated. And the process that's underway with the broadband infraco on the procurement side is looking also from a technical design to see which government facilities are closer to which existing infrastructure, so that will facilitate the allocation at the end of the process when it's concluded. Then there was a question on in terms of Member Sheen on the issue of the 800 sites, whether they've been connected. Those have not been connected, but they were the planned target for Q2, and that was still aligned with the initial process that was saying that a service provider will need 3 months to connect about 800 to 1,000 sites. So now we're saying each service provider will be focusing on each district to connect
almost the same number of sites, depending on the capacity and the challenges in that environment. And then the issue of CETA, it was because there are other government facilities. We do have some sort of existing infrastructure and connectivity. However, those are very low speed, and we need to upgrade the infrastructure. But the existing contractual agreements that the different government departments have with different service providers. So the process to fast-track that is the engagement with the departments and also the service providers to amend the contractual obligations in, so that we are able to integrate the existing infrastructure and we're able to upgrade the speeds that are required in terms of the broadband. And that will also fast-track the process of the rollout. On the issue of the SMMEs, we, as part of this process, also to implement the ICT SMME strategy that the department has, we requested as part of the procurement process with Broadband Infraco that where a big operator is bidding for this process to roll out a broadband, they need to submit proof of their partnership with SMMEs, and that's part of the evaluation. That at least we know that the work will also assist the SMMEs because of the capacity concerns that the SMMEs have, but they have to be brought on board by the big operators where it's necessary. And where the SMMEs do have capacity in a small scale, we are also considering to engage with them directly so that they also expand on the existing infrastructure and the department, on the back of the contract that the department will have entered into with them. Yeah, Chairperson, you're right on the issue of the savings that the Treasury is taking the money because there have been delays on the starting of the program. Unfortunately, we delayed. We were trying to finalize the governance and the procurement process. But as indicated during the presentation, we are almost finalizing we have finalized one part of the procurement, and we're intending that by either this week or next week, we should be able to finalize the second part. At least then, we should be able to appoint the service providers who will then be able to start the actual rollout, and the expenditure will start to move in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, if I may, on your statement that Treasury has confirmed or indicated that the money will be used to defray debt of the post office to the banks. That is correct, Chairperson. That is the initial position of Treasury. But the funds have not yet flown. They have not been transferred from Treasury to ourselves, and we have not transferred them to SAPO accordingly. As a result, then, we are using this opportunity before the funds are transferred to negotiate perhaps a better permutation on how these funds are utilized. Because in our assessment, if we settle the debts with the bank, the post office still requires some liquidity, and therefore we'll have to reapproach the market in one form or the other to get funding. So rather than settle the banks at this point in time, we're trying to see if there is not a better way of utilizing 3.7, which will keep us in the same position as going to the banks again. Thank you.
Sando, if you can respond to the one on the consultants.
Okay.
Do you want to repeat the question? So that it's...
No, the indication is that Adam was saying
because of not utilizing the consultants. So the question was, initially, you were planning or you planned to use consultant, and then he said the DDG for infrastructure is going to answer that question. I'm still waiting for that answer. And with regards to the two DDGs that were not appointed, he said the DDG for administration will provide the answer.
On the issue of consultants, the approach that has been taken for the broadband, it's not for government because of the limited finances. It's not for government to invest directly on infrastructure. So government will procure services, and then the private sector will then raise funds to roll out the infrastructure. So So the money, the way it's classified on the budget, because it's just only for procuring services from service providers, it's classified under the item consultants and advisory services. But it's the money that will be used to pay for the actual service, the broadband service that will be provided by the service providers.
I have a problem. Another thing is like you are fixated at the stage of thinking. There's nothing that is being, you know, the action part is missing here. We are thinking, we are proposing, you're not moving. We don't have time. You're thinking and you're thinking and rethinking. In the rethinking, you move, you reclassify. How? At the beginning, didn't you carefully apply your mind? Because now, as you at the implementation stage, you then reclassify even budget. What is that? Reclassification of budget. Please educate me. I think I'm a bit dull, but it's okay. I'll learn from this exercise. How do you reclassify in the process of implementation of a budget?
Chair, with regards to, according to the SCOA classification, there is nowhere in the budget line items where we can budget for the services that will be provided by the external service providers. So consultants, as we confirmed with Treasury, it's the only line item where we can budget for the SA Connect with respect to the...
So this was the advice by National Treasury?
Yes.
Okay, we can then find that instruction from National Treasury. Yes, sir?
Okay, thanks, Chair. Just to add on what the CFO have said, yes, we do budget for consultants, largely driven by SA Connect. From the 574 million under goods and services, 411 of that is earmarked, and it's for consultants. But the overall budget for the consultant is about 434 million. Now, the issue of 12% that was arising, to just unpack that one, the department has an operational budget of about 162. So the 66 million that's reflected there, that was spent, it's operational budget for the department. Well, that means that then the department itself, operationally, the expenditure is at 41% of the goods and services. Nonetheless, it does not take away the fact that we spend 12%, because even that earmarked fund for broadband still falls under goods and services. It then brings the overall percentage down. So we do budget for consultants. Amongst other line items, we do have audit committee members, we have risk committee members, we have board members, we have agreements with the universities, we have agreements with the CSIR to host the cyber security. Those are budgeted for under that line item. Yes.
Agreement, because you see, I'm looking for the movement here.
Yeah, some of them are multi-year agreements. Some of them expire during the year, and then the renewal, then there becomes a focus on the renewal. The approach sometimes changes. It's not a straightforward renewal. The terms get renegotiated in some instances, hence the delays in some of these things.
I think I can see from the member states I'm used to my team. We're not getting what we want to get. You must then assist me now with a way forward. How do you want us to move forward? We have telecommunications and postal services, but this part is the telecommunications part, am I right? The side, yeah. So how do we move forward? I know we made recommendations. Those recommendations were not implemented. We were trying to help, to say, maybe we can push you. When we said, can you submit an accelerated plan up to the end of the financial year? Is still have not received that.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to request through you, Chair, that when they come next time, they bring us a breakdown of their goods and services. That is one. And I also want to know if there are evergreen contracts in some of their contracts. And I would like to know the multi-year ones. How long are they? 40 years, 50 years, or what? Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Member Gwabaza.
Yes.
I think first
I want to agree with Honorable Shoppestone about the breakdown on goods and services. And the reason is somebody mentioned infrastructure, and I imagine you meant broadband infrastructure. In the same breath, you were talking about the, consultants. But there is an item on infrastructure on the previous page, page 3. I don't know whether you are talking about two different types of infrastructure, different from the broadband infrastructure, which requires your consultants, blah, 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 and so on. And alongside that, you are saying consultants would be from the private sector that would assist you with the actual infrastructure. And then the gentleman at the back says, yeah, we do a budget for infrastructure, 400 and something million rand around, for consultants and so on. So there is a mixture of two things that are not clear. Give us a clear breakdown of your goods and services, and services would, for instance, be consultants would be part of your services that you are talking about, I would imagine. And the actual infrastructure that the chairperson is talking about, the actual thing that goes as an infrastructure that delivers services, so that we are clear what it is that you are doing and to what extent are you expediting this project. This thing of broadband has long been talked about and it's simply not moving. We want to see it moving.
There was a plan at the end of the previous administration. In my understanding, as you know, at an entry point, you're supposed to start the implementing. With that little budget, you start, and then it will be topped up by your outer years budget. But up till now, we're stuck. Please tell the DG, we're not happy. It's unacceptable. Because we are depriving this nation of a service, a very critical service. That will also enable this country to compete with other countries of the world, ne? And succeed. But for now, how do we participate globally in terms of if we don't have the broadband in South Africa? It does take us back. It does take us back. So, and we depend on you. Unfortunately, I don't know whether you have capacitated staff. I don't know, but in some of the departments where we've analyzed a poor implementation of their plans, we found that there's a lack of capacity. So there's a lesson to learn there. Whenever you appoint people, it must be skilled people. We must have learned from our mistakes. We must learn from our mistakes. Skilled people. All right, so as we round up with you, yes, ma'am, do you want to come?
There was a question, but it's a very quick one, on the two DDGs. When did they become vacant and when they're going to be filled? The DDG policy was vacant with effect from 1 July 2015, and there have been colleagues acting and rotating in that position. We've got a new colleague that just started, Ms. Mamet, who's acting in that position. And
acting,
DDG,
you didn't say appointed.
Acting.
what is the plan? Because in terms of appointment, the turnaround, I think it's three months.
Six months? Yes.
Okay. I'll take 6 months. Thank you for correcting.
Okay.
Six months.
Yes, it's 6 months.
So 2015?
The other one was vacant 2015. The other one of ISET was vacant 2014, September. We advertised those positions recently, and as we are about to fill them, but because of the structure that is not finalized, in administration there are two targets. One was the culture and climate, which we have we were able to achieve. Then the other one was the issue of the structure, and the structure is not finalized yet. And because of that, we then put them on hold, and they are two colleagues that are currently acting. As soon as we finalize that particular structure, because Minister said we need to finalize the structure, we will then consider filling those two positions. I thought I should answer that because the question was asked, and there was a follow-up, and CFO had referred it to me.
How long will it take you to finalize the structure? Because it's also impacting negatively. Because now you say you put the appointment on hold because of the structure that has not been finalized.
Yes,
and finalized by who? Because public service
and administration.
And administration are supposed to validate or evaluate and validate your organogram.
Yes.
But how long? Which means you have not done it. From 2014, now we're moving towards, we still have an unfinalized structure.
From 2014, when the department became the Department of Telecommunications, there was a structure that was in place, the interim structure that was used by the department. But then recently, as of last year, we started with our own structure that was dealing with telecommunication. And Public Service Administration was involved. They assisted us with the service delivery model. We submitted now to the minister the functional structure, which will now be followed by the actual organogram that we should get concurrence from the Department of Public Service and Administration. So the process has moved, because one of the reasons the process took long was for us, because we wanted to stash out our mandate as an organization emanating from the proclamation, and making sure that when we do it right the first time, and we know that this is the mandate of the organization, and we don't duplicate what was done previously as DOC, or we come up with a structure that talks to DOC. But we have moved, we've submitted the functional structure. We are consulting on that one, then we come with the organogram. The next time we come back, we will be having a proper organogram. And I'm sure DPSA will not delay the actual approval, because they are assisting us with the whole process. They are involved. We are able to go to them and bounce off, and they have already ratified all the other processes that we have put in place to come up with the actual structure. So the two DDG positions will then, and other positions emanating from the structure, will then be filled if the COE does allow. Thanks, Chair and members.
When we asked for the acceleration plan, we wanted a plan that is time-bound. But multi-accelerate means we are going to perform, not as usual. It's accelerated for this, even going towards the end of this administration. That's the accelerator. Now, there's no plan. There's no plan. We don't have it in front of us. So our conclusion is there's no plan. That's why you're moving slowly. We don't have time. As for us, our time ends in end of next year. Now, we want to end having finished our work, our business. That's the thing. And our business, you are our business, to see to it that you have a strat plan, you have your medium-term strategic framework, and then within it, you then have your 3 months budget plans, and then your APP, annual performance plan. Okay? But then you then deliver in terms of those plans, not just have plans and not deliver, not implement. And also, we don't have the luxury time. You take time. Your turnarounds are too long. You think we have time. So if you can be time conscious, and just think about those people who've been waiting for this service, man, out there. And then, I'm sure you'll be able to respond timeous. And the Constitution, says there must be timeous intervention. Timeous, not me. Responsive to the needs of the people and timeous intervention. intervention. And you must give us accurate information. You see, I caught you when you said, no, you are proposing. Still proposing, but this money, what you said to us is that this money is ring-fenced. And we expect National Treasury to ring-fence it. Because if it's not ring-fenced, it should be used in environments. So it must be ring-fenced for the purpose for which it was allocated. That's a budget principle. So it must be ring-fenced. You see, already before it's released, you're already thinking of using it somewhere else. Let National Treasury ring-fence it. No, you mustn't release it. You must ring-fence it and use it for the purpose for which this bailout was allocated. All right. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
We propose that we elevate this matter to the minister, and we need to be very serious about it, and we need to have time frame.
Elevate it to the minister, and then we must have time frame. Okay. I know that for the two meetings we had them without. Is there a deputy minister in this panel? Okay. We've had the two meetings without the minister. So, okay, I think we all agree with this, right? So meaning that in the next meeting we should sit here with, because the minister, for instance, we talking, it does not hear even what we say, because after this we're supposed to make a follow-up, ask you how you're going to, remember? There are questions that you can't answer, like we said 213,499 saving due to South African Connector. I said, how are you going to protect this one, because National Treasury takes, if you have not used, it takes the money for those programs that are running and are implemented. Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much. I think we're done with your good self. We will then move to because SAPO is here, we'll then move to SAPO and request support to do a presentation to the members, and the members will then interrogate that presentation. Thank you very much. You sure there are no responses that you would need to, because you are monitoring the work of support. You sure you want to leave, or you're going to? Some of you will stay. Okay, but you must remember next time you don't want a big delegation. Okay. Don't forget to submit your breakdown on your goods and services and the accelerated plan. You still want it. You still want that accelerated plan. And please, can we be taken serious this time?
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. The name is Comfort Ngidi. I'm the Acting Chairperson of SAPO, and with me is our CEO, Mark Barnes, the Chief Operations Officer, and Nikki, who is the CFO and the Secretary of the Board, Mr. Dada. I'll then ask Mr. Barnes to lead the presentation, which is what circulated, as I understand, before. And thank you once again.
Acting?
Chair, unfortunately, I do not appoint myself. I've been acting since when? Since 2016. The chairperson of the board, Mr. Simo, resigned, and I was asked to act in 2016 together with the deputy chairperson, and I've been recently extended. I've had, strong words to the department regarding my acting, because I feel it's just not right in terms of what the act provides. But unfortunately, they've given some explanation with regard to why they cannot appoint a permanent chairperson. It's quite heavy on me at the acting level for 2 years.
Honourable members, I really much. No, I will just
Chairperson Porter, honourable members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation to you. You've had a copy of the presentation. I'll be brief and I'll highlight the points I think of substance that matter to us and that hopefully can be made clear to you for the last 6 months. The SAPA Group posted a net loss of some 700 million over the last 6 months. The revenue of 2.3 billion is fairly flat in respect of last year. In fact, you'll see when we diagnose this a little further that revenue is very steady at the moment. For a declining business, I'm still comfortable with that. The real challenge is that we haven't invested in growth, in diversified other sources of income. But postal income, we should not expect that to grow significantly off this base. All of these things I'll diagnose a little further. Our expenses of 3 billion are predominantly made up by staff. And because of these factors, the cash flow position remains constrained. And the real issue for us at the moment is that we are not investing money in diversified income streams. And I'll get into some of that analysis and what we plan to do about it just now. On the non-financial side, I think things are showing some light. We are rolling out the DTT project, which you all have been aware of, which had a really slow start. We are the last mile in that delivery process, and that's seen quite a big boost in the last year. Our delivery standard for mail has improved to 88%. Now, 88% is a good number normally, but it's not a good number in mail. You know, we need to get into the high 90s so that people's letters and parcels all get to them. But I'll say this. We find everything. Sometimes it takes a little longer, but we find everything that people are looking for nowadays. We've rolled out more addresses to citizens, as I said out there. We're well advanced with the post-bank license application. There are two issues that require to be dealt with, and again, I'll delve into them in the detail later. The first one is a legislative issue. There is an inconsistency between the Banks Act on the one hand and the Companies Act on the other hand. The Banks Act requires for you to be a licensed bank, you need to be a public company, and the Banks Act specifically says that a state-owned company is not a public company. So it's a technicality. In fact, it would be argued, it has been argued legally, that that's an oversight and it just requires a one-line amendment. We're waiting for Cabinet to approve that amendment. I believe it has been proposed. We just think it was a misalignment of when the two acts were promulgated. I will talk in some detail to our performance objectives, which is where we still fail. If I go to the income statement, you know, the principal difference, the reason for us being behind budget is our growth initiatives, which were to come out of the post bank, which I seriously expected would have been licensed over a year ago, and to come out of growth initiatives like e-commerce, where we simply haven't had the cash flow to invest. But our core business only shows a 2% year-on-year decline, and that, I would argue, is a good achievement in old-fashioned post. Mail still contributes 62% of our revenue. We're hoping one day that'll be less than a third because of growth in other areas. And then I've listed some of the... We've got an increase in the motor vehicle licensing revenue. That's just an increase in efficiency, as well as a growth in the car park. And then because of interest rates being higher than they were previously, we're slightly ahead in terms of our interest revenue in the bank. We have cut costs. We've cut 277 million out of our cost base. We're below budget on costs. But of course, you know, costs and revenue go together. So we haven't got revenue initiatives that have materialized. Those costs that are associated with them also don't materialize. Our staff cost has declined by 2%. That's just attrition. In the 2 years that I've been there, our staff complement is reduced by something like 2,500, which is about 10%. That's just been natural attrition and the voluntary severance packages that we initially installed. The interest on our loans is an item that's going to go away substantially as we get a proper equity injection. It is, in our view, not sensible to fund a turnaround strategy on debt. And so we'll again talk about how we're going to replace that kind of funding as we move forward. And we have obviously a high fixed cost structure, which is only one way of describing what we've got. The other way of describing what we've got is that we've got a massive state infrastructure, which is underutilized. I drove past, in coming into Cape Town this morning, I drove past a building that said Wharf Postkantoor, one of the beautiful buildings of Cape Town, totally underutilized, no longer utilized by the post office. We need to get back into those buildings. So we have a net loss which of 723 million for the reasons that I've outlined. But I need to explain the post office in really straightforward terms. We have, we lose at our current run rate with no money invested in new growth businesses, we lose about 100 million rand a month. That's 1.2 billion rand a year. 716 million of that money is as a result of us complying with universal service obligations. That means we are running post offices with a social mandate that will not make money. You can't make money at 3.90 rand a letter, delivering letters to Mthatha at 480 rand a trip. It's just not possible. So 700 million of the 1.2 billion loss is an obligation of the state, and we do not get that subsidy back. The other 400 million is interest on the 3.7 billion, I'm rounding, of loans. So if you were to properly capitalize the post office, which is coming, and if you were to pay for the obligations of the state in terms of the social mandate of the post office, we'd be running at a roughly break-even company before growth. And we would also be able to use that social grant, so to speak, not to want to introduce the question of social grants yet, Chairperson, to invest in growth businesses which are of a commercial nature. If I move on. Just to look at the balance sheet, I've talked, we're solvent, and we have a net asset value in excess of a billion, or close to a billion at the moment, as of our last annual report. But we have an interest cost of 364 million, which is an amount that gets paid out to private sector banks. And then the various subsidies for projects, all of those projects are actually going very well. Postbank in particular has a very high net asset value. So Postbank, to just characterize it, is a division of the post office group, but it's an autonomous division. And if you look at the numbers there, you'll see we've got quite a lot of excess capital lying idle in the Postbank. We've got nearly 3 billion rand sitting there essentially on deposit because we don't have a banking license to lend. And that's the challenge that we'd like to see some movement on. Okay, we in fact have about 8 billion rand of cash and near cash on deposit with banks and treasury, which essentially lies idle, while our deposit base nonetheless continues to grow by 7%, which in banking terms is a very significant growth rate. There's a lot of faith in the future of the Post Bank. Let me get onto the slide that's always difficult for us. In terms of our performance, I've alluded to some of the causes as I see them about revenue growth. You know, revenue growth, if you've got four major new diverse revenue streams that you've undertaken to produce and you haven't spent any money on producing them, then they're not going to materialize. And so we fail miserably on revenue growth. On optimizing the cost base, we're sort of halfway there. And on operational efficiency, which is measured by some serious international standard kind of achievements in our old post office, we're making progress. Delivery standards around the world now are starting to be measured as 98%, not 85%, because of the competition of technology, which where the delivery is like 100%. And so it's quite difficult to do well on these metrics when you are still, if you like, an old physical and yet underutilized infrastructure. And there is a deeper analysis later, if you will, on the KPIs. It's also a difficult matrix for me, this, because you either get 0 or 1, and there are things which we believe are well advanced but haven't been fully achieved yet. To go into the summary a bit further, we achieved 72% of budget, but I really think that's, and I'm not going to keep repeating myself, that's because we didn't invest in growth. Our customer complaints that are resolved within 7 days is 83%. It used to be in the 60s. The net interest income is more or less online, and so are the depositor accounts. We have spent some money on upgrading systems to where they should be in terms of the parcel system. I mean, the world in which we operate is becoming increasingly technological in terms of our counterparts around the world. I mean, to give you an example, at our Tambo, our increase in volumes from as a result of internet-based orders is 400% up on the year. But it's not great business. The real business from e-commerce is made by the outgoing post office, not the incoming post office. And so we've got lots and lots of stuff coming from China, very small value items, which are clogging up our archaic sorting systems, but not making us a lot of money. We're spending a lot of time, and we're getting a lot of support from DTPS on this, on developing e-commerce that becomes an outbound platform for South African goods and services to get onto the world markets, and then you'll see an extraordinary change in that business once we've invested in the technology. We achieved, as I say, quite a high percentage of the delivery standard. I think this next slide is very important for us to grasp, if I might suggest, Chair. So this is how we're looking at our funding. Let me first of all say what we'd spend it on. We've got 350 million of creditors. We're anticipating further cash falls of 600 million for the financial year ending March 2018. We need to spend roughly R1 billion on CapEx to diversify those income streams and to make ourselves a competent player in the UPU context of world-class post offices. We'd like to repay a loan that we raise later, and then we're looking again at cash flow shortages in 2019 of 600 million. That comes to 3.5 billion if we have a two-year outlook on this business. We're currently in the final stages of negotiating a 400 million rand overdraft facility, which is within the current treasury guarantee. We would, as DTPS alluded earlier, we would argue to retain R1 billion of facilities, although the Treasury 3.7 billion has been allocated initially for the full repayment of banks. We would like to negotiate that. We believe that Postbank is way overcapitalized. As I said, they're sitting with R3 billion of excess cash, which is sitting on deposit earning, I don't know, 3-4% after tax. We could use that in growth businesses to earn a much greater return. And that's a discussion we'll need to have with the bank, because we treat them very autonomously and with National Treasury's acquiescence and the board's acquiescence as well. So we'd argue, for example, let me put that in context. In terms of our banking license approval, if we were to be regarded as a highly risky bank, which we are not, we're probably the lowest risk bank in the country and the seventh biggest, by the way. And we would be given a capital adequacy requirement, that is to say the amount of capital you must retain in relation to the total deposit base, of 28.75%. That's the highest capital allocation you can be given. Most banks operate at about 10%. Even on that capital adequacy ratio, we'd have 1.5 billion of excess capital sitting idle in the bank. We would argue some of that should be deployed in the other businesses. We want to be independently financed in time. There was a time when the post office was independently financed. I don't know if you read about it in the paper today, but Land Bank is independently financed and prospering. And there are two reasons we want to be independently financed. One, after the capital injection from Treasury, we'll have quite a strong balance sheet. And two, we have an extraordinary portfolio of assets, property. And so we are in initial evaluations, and these have not been approved by the board, or although they have been discussed, they've not been approved and signed off on, and the terms haven't been signed off on. But in essence, we'd like to raise a bond against some of our properties. If we've got 2.7 billion of unbonded property, and if we were to raise R1 billion of capital against that, that would be 3 times covered, more or less, which is a very bankable proposition. We have a big tax loss at the center of the post office. So the yields that we get from renting out those businesses to the operating businesses will be gross for net, which means to say that if we get an 8% rent, it will be an 8% rent after tax. So we've got a very secure, very interesting asset for retail capital investors. And then secondly, we would like to look at a retail bond, which is looks for a government guarantee, because I don't think we'd be able to do it without a government guarantee. But essentially, the difference of us raising a post office bond rather than having Treasury underwrite a private sector loan is that we are then able to issue that bond to citizens of South Africa. There was a time, any of you old enough in the room to remember, that you could go and buy a post office bond. And it was a high-yielding bond that used to yield around 8%, where we're paying our depositors 3%. And instead of paying 8% to the citizens of South Africa by a post office bond, we are paying 9.5% to institutional banks as a result of the same guarantee. So we would argue that our capital independence becomes important to us. And the last point I'll make about raising these bonds on our own balance sheet is they're 10-year money, whereas now we sit and we argue with the banks every quarter. So if we were to achieve those plans, we'd end up in a situation where we've still substantially reduced Treasury's exposure, which I'll get to in a minute. We'd have surplus capital to our requirements, and we'd become an independent capital entity, which we desperately plan to be. I've talked about these property bonds, and I've talked about the retail bond. I'm not going to repeat them on the next page, which takes us then to the recapitalization. We have 3.7 billion of borrowings. With government guarantees. They've proposed that we use the allocation of 3.7 billion entirely to settle those loans to the banks. I think that DDG, just as I was sitting here earlier, explained why we would argue that that doesn't solve the problem in as much as we still require some continuing funding before we issue our own capital market money. And so we would be in discussion, if there's still time to do that, about a different allocation. But for the time being, as the rule stands now, that will be used to settle the banks. That will mean that SAPO is completely debt-free. Okay. Other than we would then still seek the 400 million overdraft. But in the context of the size of the company, that's a very small amount of money. So we'd have that facility. We would, however, like to grow the company, not just keep it safe. And so we would propose to raise our own capital for investment, strictly for investment. That would, in the net result, if we raised all of this new capital on our own balance sheet, we'd reduce government guarantees from 3.7 to 1.4 billion, which would release some capital to the fiscus. The next slide is a bit busy, and I don't propose to go into all of the detailed numbers, which were the, and again, this has been presented to our board, but not signed off by the board or approved by it, because these things are all contingent on the capital structure, which I've described coming into fruition. But if I start on, we're a mixture. As the post office, we're a mixture of a government service and a commercial enterprise. And those two kinds of businesses need to be managed very differently and very separately. And it's when you mix them together and make them both subject to the same set of rules that you get a mixed, non-productive result. So we have at the center of that diagram in red the mail business. That, in today's world, in the way we present it, is primarily a service business. As I said to you, we incur 700 million rand of expenditure a year in maintaining addresses and maintaining a presence, as we are required to do in remote areas which are not commercially viable to do so. Then we go to e-commerce. E-commerce is a fantastic business. We have already increased our space at the OR Tambo Airport by 70%, and we have plans and hopes and ideas for SAPO to be a southern African, or depending on how wide you want to describe it, hub for the whole of SADC, because we not only have the best airport in SADC, but we also have harbors and other things in South Africa which are not available to inland Africa. And so there's an extraordinary story to be created at the airport as a hub for e-commerce, and there is stated interest from international partners coming from China, from India, from, I could give you the list that are waiting on the sidelines to become our partners in technology and in capital to provide that facility. So we need to do it. It's in the rest of the world, it's been the savior to post offices, not the burden. Now, if you go into India, you know, e-commerce is growing within the post office, which is the final leg of delivery, by over 100% per annum for the last couple of years. We see that same possibility here. There are huge intersections between what's happening in India, in places like India, Russia, and China, and what's happening here in our own country. On the bank side, I've talked about our concern that we haven't got the license yet, and we're eager for that to happen. But we also think that there's a proliferation of smaller tier two banks that don't necessarily have a differential purpose within the country, and maybe those should be consolidated to broaden the footprint and to speed up the credit and systems requirements that we have to fulfill our mandate of financial inclusion. It is a primary driver of my strategy and my executive colleague's strategy and the post office to play a principal role in the financial inclusion in our society. So if we talk about Postbank a bit more, we would hope, and this is where I'll get into SASA grants, and I'm sure there'll be questions which I'm happy to answer as to where we are on that, but we see Postbank as the transactional bank for government, bearing in mind that SASA grants aren't a risk process. There's no credit extension. It's just a passage of money efficiently from the state to its citizens. SAPA is adequately prepared to do all of that, and I'll differentiate and I'll speak, if you wish me to, Chairperson, about the status of the SASA grants later. Financial inclusion I've spoken to, I've written about personally, it's one of the principal drivers of what I think we can play a role in as Postbank. Postbank's got too much capital. It needs to either build or, as I mentioned previously, potentially acquire other credits and systems in other idle banks. And we need the final support of National Treasury as we approach. Ultimately, the South African Reserve Bank signs off on this, but we have lots of partners in this, and one of them would be National Treasury, and we would seek their final support on this thing. I've talked about the possibility of acquisition, but it is my view that solving inequality is the primary driving resolution to create economic prosperity, to fund transformation, and to ensure enduring peace in our country. When I reflect on who we are at the post office, I end up asking myself this question all the time. You know, are we a government department or a competitive business? And we're both. And we have this extraordinary national asset. It's not ours. We are owned by the state. It belongs to the state. We're just the only people living there for now. We should populate the post office infrastructure with whatever state services the state wishes to deliver or receive from its citizens. We should be handing out healthcare products. We should be doing funeral policies. We should be distributing education. We should be using them as voting booths. This infrastructure is bought and paid for, honorable members, chairperson. Use it. It's yours, not ours. So that's where we are, a government department. And we're not price sensitive to there. We will take instruction at what price, because we're all in the same house. But we also have competitive business. There was a time when the post office was a monopoly, when it was protected, when it had reserved areas which balanced out the universal service obligation. Those days are not with us. The delivery business is a competitive business. I don't like mentioning competitors, but PostNet has taught us how to behave. You know, we look at them and we see what we could learn from them. But the courier business is a cutthroat business. There are 300 courier companies in South Africa that thrive on the 2014 disaster that was the post office, where they essentially moved in and stole our lunch. But what they can't do, which we can do, is be the central delivery point to South Africa. So we can clear customs within the post office. They can't do that. So our view now is not to create competing courier companies that are out there, but to become the center for all courier companies, maybe, and enter into revenue share agreements with them. And so you can come and collect your stuff here. We'll have it customs cleared for you, and then you can go and deliver it, because the, you know, they have strictly commercial-driven principles. They don't have socially-driven principles. And, I must be honest with you, they'd like that. And they've said so to me. They don't want to be a post office. Take Deutsche Bank, Deutsche Post in Germany and DHL. DHL is owned by Deutsche Post, but they see themselves as two completely different businesses. The only reason that DHL delivers to Mthatha, which I always use as my example, is because they have to. It's because we haven't. And so we see ourselves now with the right capital investment being able to be the center of some of these things. We also have no further protection of the reserved areas. It's a misnomer to think that ICASA protects or even can protect, maybe, you know, the less than 1 kilogram, reserved areas for the post office, the use of post boxes, which by law, we the only people allowed to have post boxes. Well, go to your local shopping center and see if you can find lots of people with post boxes. We don't get that protection. We are no longer a monopoly. We are no longer a utility. We're in a highly competitive industry, and we need to behave differently if we're going to survive there. And that is going to involve public-private partnerships. I'm not talking privatization. I'm talking capital and technology partners that we control within our structure. China Post has got 60% of its revenue comes from banking. It's got an extraordinary reach in e-commerce. All of those things are public-private partnerships between the post office infrastructure and the technology that's out in the private sector. We want to own the center of the world, but we want to have complementary partners in the delivery of the... So if you summarize all of that, what would we be asking for? We would ask the government to subsidize or to fund the development mandate if they wish us to continue with it. And we would ask to think about capital and other partners for the commercial competitive aspects of our business. Chair, that's the end of my presentation. There are some supplementary pieces of information in the annexure. I'll stop for now. Thank you for your attention.
Honourable members, you have been listening to a presentation by SAPO, and I will now open the floor for questions. Honourable member Topham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to get some clarity, a lot came clearer after listening to the presentation than before, when I thought I'd read the whole presentation and asked the department questions. First, the net asset value, you said 1 billion. It says you had 2.9 billion. Was that just a mistake, or is it actually something that's not been updated yet? I presume that is also after the 2.7 billion revaluation. So the net asset value would be closer to that cost would have been 300 million or so. The money from Treasury, that's coming without any strings attached, no interest obligations, etc. Okay, so that also answers another question. So you'll clear 400 million of your 361 million interest, ballpark, but then you still require over and above that 3.5 billion, you say, on page 7, if I'm correct, of which 500 million will come from accessing in the post bank. How do you plan to take it from the post bank theoretically into the post office? Theoretically, if you were on loan it to yourself, there would be an interest calc there, and then there would be a billion loan facility of 400 million, and then those other. So effectively, you want to loan 3.9 billion, which would be theoretically interest around about 270 million or so. So you'll save the 361, but you'll come in with another 270 million. But at least you've answered one of my previous questions. You then will be taking that money in full and putting it into the operation, so something will change. Because if you didn't do that, there would be no change. What I was saying earlier was, I don't use the post office for a number of years like most South Africans. and but I do once a year as one of my positions. I'm a company secretary of a listed company, and I have to post off by the 31st of December. So I actually had the things all sent through to me. On the 28th of December 2016, 400 letters were stamped by the post office. On the 27th of January, one day short of 1 month later, that envelope was stamped with the date, postmarked. A month and a half later, because it was after the AGM, I received that letter in the post. So I'm trying to say that fortunately I wasn't sued by any shareholder to say they didn't get proper notice of the meeting. But if that's the core business, and you say, for instance, that you only decline by 2%, etc., the reality is I think that in the information age, if you write a letter, people will read it. They don't read emails. But you know, there's a lot of opportunities still for that business, but the people don't trust the post office. You know, if you don't trust the post office to deliver a letter, you finish. And I use the example of the couriers that you brought up now. Black Friday was delivered to my house yesterday by the courier company. So that, you know, they can also teach the post office how to do things as well. I mean, that's the bottom line. If that's the core of the post office, is delivering post, we're going to deliver post speed in a timeless manner. So of this capital expenditure, is any of that going to try and help actually sort that out? And then I'm very interested in the banking, because I also sit on the finance committee, so the banks, and worked with the Reserve Bank last in the past. So the bank side of it is very, very interesting for me. At the present moment, how are they paying the shareholders? Are we? I mean, you're paying shareholders a return on the money deposited, and you are you having to rely on retail investments at this point in time? You can't, for instance, use that money, and this is where you were talking about independently finance, I presume, to loan it back to yourself or to any other government institutions or to buy other bonds. I presume you probably put into the bond market. I've lost my place, my thing, so I'm going to move on, Madam Chair, and I'll come back in the second round with some additional questions. Thanks.
Next, who is next? Is it you? Honorable Snook. Yeah, Honorable Snook on you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you very much for this very useful presentation. I think I really like the presentation. But one does have to ask a few things. I'm happy about, all the proposals that are here. Hopefully, they'll come to fruition. Just a few little things, some of which are not necessarily related to the presentation, but where should I start? Okay. In terms of infrastructure for post offices, I think one of my colleagues mentioned, I think it was Honorable Shoppes Tole, who spoke about the rural areas where she lives. An area where probably your clientele is, because those people do not really have other means of communication, but they don't have post offices. To get to the nearest post office, they have to travel. They have to, and they don't have the money, and therefore, I think issues of success. Of access, because if we are talking of actually optimal utilization of post offices, we need to also look at some of the challenges that we have. But what I also would like to speak about, the work ethic at most post offices. I'm talking now personal experience. I've seen a whole lot of things happening there. You know, you go to a post office, most of them are not really busy, but people will really be chatting. And these are little things that can be annoyances to people. Little things like you go into a post office, you see these girls standing there and talking amongst themselves. And I'll extend it to yesterday, my experience yesterday in Johannesburg. At one post office, I went to pay my motor vehicle license. And I was on the queue, very short queue. Then the person in front of me finished. When she finished, then this lady just decides to dial on her cell phone. then she spoke. And I mean, I could hear everything she was saying, but she wasn't, it wasn't related to work. It was a personal call, and she was laughing and all that. I didn't say anything. I'm just making little examples of some of the things that you'll find that are really some of the things that, so that as we try to make these changes, we also need to instill some work ethic into the people that are running the. The other thing is you go to a post office, no cards, cash only. Now, those types of things. And there's one post office where they only want a Visa card. No other card. I can mention it, Southgate, for instance, in Johannesburg. They say Visa card. You don't know what it means when they say Visa card. So I wanted to just check with you if... are they supposed to take electronic payments, all of them, or perhaps the infrastructure that doesn't allow them? Because I thought that in this modern era, I mean, everywhere you can use, but I understand because there are lots of other places where you would expect to find this happening. But so that there is some form of uniformity, because if we don't, you cannot get what you want from a post office. Then it is effort. Well, the offline thing, especially in the townships, they're always offline, and all those little things can be really a. But then the other question that I just want to know, your state of readiness for the. I know you said you can speak to the issue of SASA, but do you think you have the necessary infrastructure, your state of readiness to deliver on the SASA? Monday. Thank you.
Honorable Shoppers Tole.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know if you are able to comply with the 30-day payments of your suppliers, especially the smaller ones. That is one. And I also came across a new way called evergreen contracts. I don't know if you have got those contracts. And if you do, can you supply a list of those to this committee, and how long? Is it 1 year, 50 years, 100 years? I would like to know that. Thank you.
Okay, let me hand over to Oya. Sorry?
The cream of letter and
Shin. Yes, yeah, over to you. If you want to, okay. After him,
so
after
him.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Vance, there's a lot of good ideas here that I think we've had some inkling of before. Just one thing, on your slides at the bottom of your slides, you say restricted. Why is that? Why are these slides restricted? Or is that just an oversight? Your ideas on slide number 7. Which is your funding requirements that you've got stars next to. This is your view that Postbank has excess capital, that there must be a retail bond and a property bond. You say these have been sources of future capital discussed but not approved by DTBS, SAPO board or the minister. Are they actively engaged with this? Are they enthused by this idea? And obviously what does, I presume you've discussed it with National Treasury. What is their idea on this? Also, we're in the state, I suppose, of producing the budget for next year. Are any of these proposals going to be included in the department's budget for that time? You talk about the property bond and the retail bond not yet approved. If they are approved within the next 6 months, example, just to say that, how long would it take for those bonds to be available to investors? You know, what would be the rollout of those? Your 3.7 billion rand bailout, that money hasn't come to you yet. You're busy negotiating on how you can best use that money on investments within your in your operations. When will you get a decision on that? And are you getting a sympathetic hearing? Yeah, that's basically it. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry to come back, but remembering my place. But just, I like the way you came up with the number on the social mandate. And I think it's very important because a state-owned company has a very important social function. That's why what differentiates post office from SAA. You know, it has a social mandate. I haven't seen your annual report and stuff, but I would think it's a very good idea to try and have that figure reported in there and even considered by auditors, etc., because it's going to help justify the reason for continued potential subsidy of that part from the fiscus in the long term. I also presume that the reason for the offline structures, etc., has got to do with the aged infrastructure, which is the reason for the billion capex going forward. And then when you talk about potential acquisitions linked to your tier 2 banking, etc., I presume the idea is potential buy some of the smaller banks. Bearing in mind that that's very not politically sought after currently. There's a big argument for lots of banks to be given the space to grow. So just a sort of a comment more than anything on that one. Then my last real question is about e-commerce. The funding model there, is that from charging a fee for clearing customs, or is there something else involved as well? Because I see you call it including courier revenue share, but is there something else? How do you make money on theoretically the e-commerce platform going forward? Thank you. And one more thing, on the banking license. The expertise for a banking license and to manage a tier one bank potentially. You don't have it already in-house, I would presume. That would be too costly. Or do you, in your opinion, have most of that expertise already in place? With intention to, or is it intended to staff it once the license comes through?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just one little thing that I forgot. I just would like to know, in terms of the services offered, I mean, these that bring about some revenue for the post office, is there any reason why an urban post office in a fairly new mall, beautiful infrastructure, doesn't have a facility for payment of motor vehicle licenses? Because I've got one that I know that doesn't. Does it have to be phased in, or does it get introduced immediately when the post office is built? Because it looked very funny that such a nice, beautiful post office wouldn't offer that. So how do you make choices of those that can offer the service? Thank you.
Yeah, on just one question from myself. Earlier on, before you came in, there was a suggestion that from the department that you have what they called non-core services. And when we inquired, they indicated that you, for instance, have property that you probably are not using. If you could speak to that and indicate to us exactly what is it that would be non-core service that you still are running and probably costing you some money. I heard the gentleman was presenting that there is a very nice post office here in Cape Town, which is unused. And I would imagine that you'd like to reactivate that as much as you would other unused post offices elsewhere, precisely because you need to have a very wide outreach, especially to rural communities who really would love to have your services, especially now that you're talking diversification as well. That would serve them well, too. So if you could speak to that subject. because we would be worried if you sell property which is identified as non-core, but at the same time you want to spread your reach to other areas. Thanks. And you want to diversify as well.
Shall I begin the answers? I see the chairs back. Okay. Just to clear up the confusion on the net asset value, the net at this stage, Postbank is a division of the Post Office Group. It's not a separate entity. We've created a separate entity called Postbank Limited SOC, which has now got its own board and is a separately registered company in anticipation of the license. When that license comes through, the assets and liabilities, the business of the bank will be transferred into that entity, and it's got its own Reserve Bank approved board of directors. I sit on that board, and so that's when that will happen. So the NAV, the net asset value of the bank, is $3 billion. But when you aggregate it all within the post office, given the losses that we've incurred over the last number of years, the NAV of the group on a consolidated basis is $1 billion. So I hope that that clarifies it up. The National Treasury funding has got no obligations in as much as it's equity. It's pure share capital, and obviously they would hope to get dividends one day. So would I hope that they get that, but we'll see. we talk about the $500 million, that's excess capital in the bank. I mean, you know, in a technical sense, that $500 million belongs to the group because it's just a division of ours. So we could willy-nilly, if you like, transfer it out. We've been absolutely clear that we will not touch the money inside the Postbank division. You know, just to demonstrate the way we think about that as an autonomous economic entity. So since 2002, which is a long time ago, when there were some transfers made, there'd be no transfers. So we have this extraordinary situation where you've got a very highly profitable, highly liquid division within a company that's losing money, but we don't touch their money. And that's because we want to demonstrate on purpose that despite whatever toughness we've been through, we don't seek to transfer money that isn't ours, although it is ours. Okay, so that's the reason why. And now we're saying they've just got too much, man. So let's tell everybody, let's get everyone's permission, and let's use some of that capital, which is earning 2%, 3% after tax. The other reason why we would look at transferring $500 million out of the bank into the post office is because we've been giving them a tax shield. So they don't pay tax. If they were operating as an autonomous division, they'd be paying tax on because they're profitable. They use our tax shield because we've got a tax loss. Because if you add that up, the amount of the tax shield is about $500 million over the years. So essentially that's our money from a technical and economic point of view. And so we would seek under any number of labels, but technically under that label, for that money to be transferred or to be left behind when they become autonomous. Right, does that clear those things up? Yes, of course you're right. We'll incur alternative interest. But there's two seriously different issues around that interest. First of all, the one you pointed out or reminded us of is that that money is being invested into new revenue streams. It's not used to fund losses. So there's another side of the interest cost. Okay. The second thing is that that money is available to South African citizens. So if you go buy a retail post office bond, you will get a return of what, let's call it 8%, instead of getting the deposit rate. What we're doing now for the same borrowings is we're paying it to well-established, some people refer to as monopoly capital banks. And I would be curious as to why a government guarantee should support an institutional bank and not the broad-based population. So the nature of the funding changes, and the last way it changes is that it's 10-year money. So you borrow it for an appropriate time period for 10 years, and it's over that period of time that you utilize it in projects, which can be 5, 6, 7 years, and repay it back from the projects that you've invested in. Absent that capital, you can't invest in projects, and so you keep funding losses. These things are clear to us. The $716 million of social mandate, is we work it out every year. We work it out very accurately every year because we need to know which part of our job is a social mandate. Now, for example, in the future of Postbank, we would argue there's a socio-economic mandate. So we would argue that financial inclusion is actually a profitable business across a variety of measures. Even in and of itself, it's a profitable business for two primary reasons in my experience. The first one is that people who have never had access to borrowings, if properly structured, have demonstrated trust and credit worthiness in the informal savings systems that they are involved in already. And poor people need to come back for more money. And their behavioral response to maturely lent money is very positive, better even than corporates. I can tell you should never lend money to the rich, because they have a disdain for it, you know. But you lend money to people and at the right price, so they can use it to build a business, to buy goods at 10 rand, sell them at 12 rand, still have some change after they pay you interest. They'll keep paying you back because they want more. So I think there's an extraordinary virtue at that level of lending properly priced money. Okay, so I'm sorry that your letter took so long. I've got a red cell phone in my bag, which is my direct line. I'll give it to you. If it happens again, please phone me. Yeah, there are still letters that lie around. But I tell you, the difference from 5 years ago is that we don't throw them away anymore. You know, the post office, when the load used to get there, they used to dump it in the street. We don't do that. And yeah, so I'm sorry. It was just slow. We do have banking expertise for the banking business that we're in at the moment. So Postbank operates under an anomaly at the moment. So mostly you usually apply for a banking license in order to take deposits from the public. That's the primary purpose of a banking license. Okay. By the way, we don't need a banking license to lend money. We just need National Credit Act approval. But we want to do it right. Okay. We could lend money tomorrow. We could get National Credit Association approval to lend money, but we don't want to do the things in a shortcut way. We want to do it in a sustainable built way, so we're patient. Okay. So we've got the banking expertise to run the bank that we are, which is a deposit taking bank and a transactional bank, so we can, and I'll get back to SARS in a minute, so we can do everything that we do, and we do it well, and we've been around for 142 years, and we've got 6 million people as clients, and they are growing at 7% per annum. That has got to be a functional bank. Not even a question. We're probably the best capitalized bank in South Africa and the seventh biggest. What we don't have is credit expertise and up-to-date competitive systems. So without giving a competitor's name, but it begins with a C and it ends with a C, and it's the fastest growing bank in South Africa. Okay. So we would struggle to compete with them, because they've got advanced systems and they've got advanced marketing and they've got advanced nous and they've got all those things. But we don't have the same target market. They are above our target market. They LSM, you know, 2,000 rand a month and more. We know these things because we want to do them. Okay. So and that's why, that would be my only reason. You talk about the acquisition of smaller banks. The only reason why we would look at a smaller bank as an acquisition is not to mop things up or to get rid of competition, but to fast-track a state-owned bank to have the right systems and credit and management capacity. That would be the only motivation that I would support and my team. Your courier delivers faster than us at a price. And yes, I've said, you know, we've missed that boat quite substantially. Yes, we buy one of them, and we've been approached to buy quite a few of them, but they come with, you know, I mean, numbers that I don't even respond to, because I've got my trick and I can work out, you know, what you should pay for something. But so we want to make them partners of ours, because they need us in some areas. They need us for the last mile delivery in Umtata. They need us to clear at the airport. So we want to find ourselves in their value chain in a different role rather than competitive. We still have our own courier, but it's not nearly as effective as this. And you've sometimes got to recognize that you're different and you've got different roles to play, and there's another way to cut up that set of economics. The tragedy about couriers in our country is that because of the post office ineptness, couriers took it over. But they took it over at somewhere between 5 and 20 times the price that we could deliver it at. That is the real risk of not having a state bank. the real state-owned bank. The real risk is not whether or not the state bank makes profit. It's what profit others make unscrupulously out of our poor people. That's the cost. It's what cost you pay for your courier that as a citizen of this country, you could pay much less if you had an efficient post office to do it. That's the issue for me on that stuff. The e-commerce economic model is a strange thing, but as it relates primarily to post offices, the way the rules of the UPU work is that the country of exit gets most of the post revenue. So, and that is to spur people to do exports, and it also says, well, you started the thing, so you should get the most money. If China is the main exporter, China is thrilled to be our partner in South Africa and to have us technologically competent to receive their goods so that they can get the revenues from us importing stuff from China. I'm just using them as an example. Okay. We would like to see more and more stuff from Africa going out to China as well, because then we'd get the biggest economic. But to even become a player, we've got to go from here to here, technology-wise. You've seen the pictures of Amazon and you and JD.com. We're not even in the same movie, man. Okay. So we want the money to do that. And it'll be seriously virtuous. So right now, we had to move the cars out of our car park at JIMC, as you all know, at Joburg International Mail Center, at AR Tambo, because of the volumes of rubbish that we're importing into our country. Small cost items, Chinese toys and rubbish. Okay, and we've got old systems. So those old systems, no matter what the unit price of a toy is, it takes one processing time. Whether it costs 4 million rand or 0.4 cents, it takes time to go through old systems. It doesn't take time to go through new systems where you can scan bags. Okay, so if we invested the capital and became a player in e-commerce, it would change our lives. Okay, and so also what we really want to do, and this is a social mandate as much as anything else, is we want to be the platform for outward sale of African differentiated, locally made goods. You know, I mean, can you buy a pregnant Nguni cow anywhere else in the world? You know, no, but you can. Maybe you could buy it from us. You mentioned something about us paying our shareholders and whether we could lend money at the moment. We can't do that in the bank as a matter of a guarantee condition. That's the only thing that's prohibiting us from doing so. Honourable Member, about our clients and the access to our post offices, and you also talked about the work ethic, and I apologise for the experiences that you've had. We're seeing quite a lot of improvement. It's what we first had to do, and we think we've got a long way along, is give people the notion that to work harder was worth it. There had to be some belief that getting your homework done first was better than waiting for last. When I arrived at the post office, the people who worked the hardest were the most in trouble, because they showed up the rest of the people. So if you handed your homework in on Friday when it was due, everyone wanted to know, why didn't you wait till Wednesday, man? And so we've had to change that, but it is changing. I can share with you some beautiful success stories where people have started to change. But of course we're not there, and I'm sorry about your experience. And if you give us the post office, we'll do something about it, not in a punishing way, but in an encouraging way. There's no reason to say that we only accept Visa. We accept all cards. The post office being offline, I have a strange time reconciling that, because, in terms of post bank, and again, I must differentiate between post bank and post office. Post bank is above the delivery uptime standards of the banking industry. We've got a higher uptime percentage than the banking industry requirement. Post office, not so much. Okay. And that is because our technology really is quite archaic. Now, our whole network, for example, just to explain to you. So in the olden days, the trick was to have a central computer processing capability and then hubs and spokes. Okay. Now, that's no longer the case. With new technology, instead of taking a piece of computer language from there to there and then spreading it out, you just take it there now. You know, so we're way behind in terms of replacing, but our network, our whole network is out for quotation at the moment, and we're looking to fix that up. You talk about some fancy post offices not having things like MV, motor vehicle licenses. That's not us, sadly, and I never like saying it's not us because we should do something about it, but that's the Department of Transport. They choose where to put machines, and it's gazetted. And we don't have any say. So, for example, you'll walk into a post office and you'll see a queue of 100 people and one machine. We've said to them, guys, you should give us two machines. That's their decision. We're just a conduit. It's not our machine. I'll come back to SASA because it's a longer speech. No, we haven't met all of our, paid all of our small suppliers in 30 days for some time. But let's just go back to where we came from. 2 years ago, we had 900 million owing to creditors. Today, I would say that our non-current creditors are what, Nikki? 100, 150, or 200 now, 200. I've got to check. Because of our liquidity position, which I get a personal record of every day that looks out for 2 weeks, that's how tight it is. Because it's taken us so long to negotiate this 400 million rand overdraft, the reason why it's taken us so long is because the banks want to know exactly what's going to happen. First of all, they wanted to know whether we were going to get a capital injection at all, this 3.7 billion that came out of the medium-term budget. They wanted to know whether there was any support. They now know we've got the support. Now they want to know exactly when that support is coming. The South African banking attitude towards state lending has changed dramatically in the last 12 months. And so we've been waiting for a fully covered, guaranteed 400 million loan facility, which we've been negotiating with months for the banks. And as soon as that comes, we will be able to settle all of our credit subject to certain things. And I don't know, I think we're on to the last credit approvals of there are five banks we deal with, and I don't want to talk about it publicly, but we're very well advanced in that process. We hate not paying creditors on time, but we are guilty of not doing that. We have one, to my knowledge, only one evergreen contract left, and that's with Nashua, which supplies us photocopies, and that is being looked at the moment. That's the only one we have. And we actually have competitor products, which I signed up for 6 months ago. So by infiltration, we will eliminate that. Also don't like discussing these things on air, but okay, so we've got one evergreen contract. I don't know why we had restricted on the bottom of the slides. It's not restricted. Sorry. You mentioned the stars on the funding slide, Honorable Sin. The DGPS, quite rightly, are at pains for us not to say things in public that haven't been through the right approval processes. And so we wanted to share what we think are fairly advanced discussions, but we wanted to make clear that these are not commitments or approvals. And that's the only reason that we put them in stars. We've thought about it a lot. We've talked about it a lot. I've got a lot of personal experience in the bond markets. I was on the Bond Exchange Board the SAFEX Board, which became the Bond Exchange Board. The way these instruments work is that you prepare a prospectus, which is an invitation to subscribe. We're looking at retail people, ordinary citizens, being able to buy these bonds, okay, and institutions. And they'd be listed on the Bond Exchange of South Africa, so they'd be readily tradable. The process of preparing the documentation for the prospectus and actually launching the public offer is about 3 months, and the completion of receiving the capital and carrying on is a total of 6 months. So between 3 and 6 months from the day we push the button, we can raise the money. The real good part of getting into the capital markets, which is where you raise this money in the public, is that once you're there, you can stay there. You can just have another bond. You can just tap your bond. You can just, when it gets repaid, you can roll it. You can do all of those kinds of things. Of course, you all get subject to the rating agencies once you're out there in the public. I'm trying to think what I might not have covered. Of what? On the 3.7 billion, are we getting a sympathetic ear? I used to know what the word sympathetic meant until I joined the post office. I don't think we get a sympathetic ear on anything. To be honest, the engagement is early. I don't know. I don't know how they're going to treat it. We would argue that our arguments are sensible. I've talked about the small banking strategy, properties and excess assets. When I first joined the post office, everyone said to me, sell a whole lot of the properties, man. You can get a lot of money quickly. At the moment, we have only 58 properties with a total market value of 70 million rand, which are mainly spare little pieces of land that we would consider selling. It is my policy not to sell property. Property is what differentiates us in terms of our positioning as state infrastructure. So if you go into any small town, in the middle of that town, the best building in the town is a post office. It's just underutilized. What could we do with it? What we started talking to people about is, well, could you build something above it, maybe? But are you going to buy it? Never. You know. So that's my stance. Now, I can be overruled, I'm sure, in time. I get approaches every day for people to buy our properties. I don't want to sell them. The properties that the post office has sold, I am convinced we all regret. If you go into Cock Bay, for example, down here, and you look at that, there's a beautiful building on next to the railway track. It's now called the African Trading Market. That was the post office. Sold for nothing. If you go, and so the list goes on. I'm not even sure we own this one in Cape Town anymore. But it's a beautiful building. If you look at the building in Bloemfontein, look at our unoccupied properties. We are the occupants of an illegal lease in Eco Point, and we have beautiful empty offices in Church Square. So property is at the core of what differentiates us. SAA sold all of their assets. I didn't think that was clever either. They made a profit in the first year, and then they created a dependency. Our very essence is that we are the physical infrastructure of last delivery. If we sell that, we've got nothing different to offer. So we don't see those as excess assets. If you sell that, it's like selling all of your airplanes and then leasing them back from someone. From then on, you create a dependency, not an asset. So our view on that is quite clear. I think, Chair, I've dealt with most of the questions. If I've an oversight, I hope someone would point it out to me. Oh, SASSA. Everyone want to talk about SASSA. So it would be known to all of you that the Interministerial Committee was called in to preside over the differences between SASSA and SAPO, and that process, which I must say was a really worthwhile process, you know, and very well guided by the DG and Mpofu there, and that resulted in the signature of an implementation protocol, which guided us towards final agreements on service delivery. Now, we are in the process of examining that detail. Okay, and what was introduced publicly here in Scopa was the question of us being price competitive. And there's been much said about that in the press. And it is my view that the numbers being bandied about, we would be almost irresponsible not to respond to, but there's a lot of mixed messages in how those numbers were come together. What we've gone back and done is zero cost budgeting, which we have been happy to have audited. So on the cost issue, competitiveness, we think we're okay. Are we able to do it? And I'm not sure that this is the forum for all of this, but let me give you a brief oversight without trying to give you too unnecessary insight. On the banking side, on the provision of the electronic banking, yes, we are able to do it. And the card production, yes, we are able to do it in time before the 1st of April. We've said that consistently. On the cash delivery systems out into the rural areas, time is not our friend. And there are various alternatives which are still under discussion, which may or may not result in an extension or a transitional time period. I don't want to go beyond my mandate here and discuss what those can be, because there's a constitutional court ruling which says we must find new service providers. And so to the extent that we can offer up our infrastructure, we are doing so. So for example, SAPO and SASA have plotted on a South African map all of their points of intersection, and we found places where we are also 5 kilometers away from a pay point and so on and so on. And we're working together on that. So the things that we've said we can do. I mean, the paying of social grants has been made out to be this massively complex thing. It's not complex, it's just big. It's just lots, but it's not complex. And systems capacity is... you can buy it off the shelf. So we have the systems within the bank and in Postbank, and we have the contracts to produce the cards and so on. The full rollout is still a matter of some discussion between us, and the extent to which we'd be involved in that is still some debate. And we face with another challenge, in my view, which is that we shouldn't, as the state, seek to replicate a system which itself needs to be modernized and changed and have more benefit from the advances of technology. You know, so if we go and replicate exactly what's there today, sure, we will have brought it within the state, but we need to anticipate what's going to happen over the next 5 years. But, yeah, you know, and also people have unfortunate experiences at the post office, and they think that that's how the post bank works. We're two very, very different businesses. Post bank lives in a computer. Money lives in a computer. Very little of it lives in your pocket. Only your money, whether it's borrowed or whether you own it, is inside a computer. Inside the Postbank computer, there's as efficiency like there is everywhere else. Money doesn't go around on the back of a truck and get delivered or get lost or get whatever. Okay. So we have these two things operating within the same group. So yes, we can do what we've said we can do. Thank you, Chair.
Minor few additions here. Just to say that we want to emphasize that we do not want to take the responsibility of SASA. We are into, when we say we'll take some responsibilities from SASA, it means we'll be working with SASA, but SASA remains with the responsibility in terms of legislation to pay the social grants. And all we're saying is also, just to add on that, because you interact with your colleagues at another level, that we want the state capacity to be increased. It should not have, let's not allow the private sector to undertake what otherwise is the state responsibility, which what SAPO together with SASA will do. The other one, which I also need to flag, which is also an area of concern where we are hoping particularly this administration, your administration would assist in achieving, is the license for the Post Bank. It has been outstanding for too many years. It's about the financial inclusion for those that are not having access to the financial services in the country. And we hope while we're all here, we'll be able to achieve the State Bank. And again, the payment of grants will assist us in that regard, in that it might help us to speed up that process. And last one, Chair, is the issue of persuading National Treasury to say, is it, yes, we accept that the 3.7 billion rand should be directed towards the payment of what is owed to the bank. But is it not wise to say at least part of it gets left to be injected into business to create more money and to create more resources within the organization than just clearing all that is owed to the bank? And again, it's within your capacity. Some of the National Treasurer, these are your colleagues, you might also help, but we are of the view that some serious consideration should be put into saying a portion of that 3.7 billion rand should be towards investment into the business to generate more resources for the organization. And once again, thank you for all the support which we have gained from you directly and indirectly.
Just want to make a quick follow-up on the 3.7 billion. Now I look like somebody who was disciplined, but I was looking for this article. I'm sure you saw the article. It says, so that you give us accurate information. I don't want to depend on the media. It says, the current social grant distributor, Cash Pay Master Service, is paid 1.8 billion a year. But SAPO's projected costs are 2.8 billion in the first year, increasing to 3.7 billion in the fifth year. Now, we're talking about taxpayers' money that has been allocated to take care of social grants. Now, can you explain this? Because to me, indeed, it doesn't sound correct. We say government does not have money, and as you come in, you take even the bigger chunk of that limited resources. But also, we, in our interaction with a public service commission, we learned that, you see, government has got money that it allocates for service delivery. But a bigger chunk of that money is consumed by the agencies, not the end user. We have a problem with that type of thinking. Because government does not generate money. Government uses taxpayers' money. So therefore, you can't come and want to pretend government is generating money. You're going to take a bigger chunk. And what about the end user? Because also the outcry out there, you've got to increase the number of social grant people. That's the outcry there. So as you come in, you take this money, can you please explain? There's no money. You can't come in now and want to take advantage of this situation and then you take a bigger chunk for yourself and little goes to the recipients.
Thank
it
you,
doesn't
Chair.
Sound correct.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll ask the CEO and Lindwe to elaborate on the actual figures. But what I think is the most important principle, Chair, with you. The most important principle, Chair, is that the taxpayer, in that same vein, requires us to build and improve the state capacity. What we're talking about when we talk about SAPO and SASA within the acceptable cost limit, doing what otherwise would have been money that would be paid to the private sector, they should work towards developing the state capacity. But Mark touched on it earlier when he said perhaps we are comparing apples with something else, but I'm going to ask him to specifically speak to the actual figures because there's a lot of misrepresentation there.
Yes.
When I was a civil servant, you know, there were government rates and then private sector rates. So you, to me, this comes, it doesn't come like government rates because there you must be sensitive. We don't have money, it comes from the taxpayer. And the taxpayer must benefit more from it than us. Now, this confirms what we got from Public Service Commission in our engagement to say no. When you see these bigger chunks of money, the bigger chunks of the bigger chunk goes to the service. It's not service, but the implementing agents. And now you're proving it here. Can't be. From 1.8 and you jump to 2 and then to 3. No one will understand that. Remember, government does not have money and you must be sensitive to that. That's why we say there must be transformation because your thinking also must be transformed. Government does not have money. So you can't want to take a bigger chunk when you know there's no money anymore, but you still want to take a bigger chunk. Instead of understanding, moving with that understanding, this is a taxpayer's money, and be sensitive to the use of taxpayers. There must be transformation even in our thinking. Can't be. It's too much. I'm a social worker. I come from a social work background. That's why I say, what is this now? No, you can't scare us because we were coming to you as our rescuer. But then you can't then kill us. When we come to a rescuer, the rescuer kills. Government. How come? No. No, you must rethink on this one. I promise you, no one is going to accept it. You see how I'm reacting? I'm only one person. Can you imagine how are the other people going to react? Because the aim of coming to you was not to waste the very limited resources, but was to enhance and also make sure that another government is sensitive to taxpayers' money. And a bigger chunk goes to, yes, we can't. I'm saying this, we are a corporation, we're not going to allow it. You hear, Mosangit? We propose for the adoption of an appropriation. This one, we will not, there's no money. So why, where there's no money and you see we've been put on a junk status, it's going to be worse moving forward. Where are we going to get this money? Okay, sorry. All right, honorable member, I'm telling you, anyone who speaks here, you speak, how are we going to rectify this? It's wrong. I've worked for government for 18 years. From 1981. No. It's you.
I would like to suggest that they actually come and present on that figure. Because, you see, she comes from social work. I come from accounting. And maybe we can meet halfway. But you need to come with that information with clear schedules attached. Don't give us lump sums. We need to know the breakdown. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Please can we give the post office a chance to explain whether that story is actually accurate? You know, we've gone on at great length assuming that that journalist is accurate. Can we please hear from the post office whether that is an accurate figure?
Because, and that assumption is not from thumbsucking. It is in the people are reading about it as I'm talking to you. It's a yesterday's case of that. So people have read about it. So it means they're sitting with that assumption as well. Right, honourable member.
No, Chair, I think I'm covered because I was going to also say that my understanding is that Mark must take us through and give us an explanation. Then we can talk afterwards.
I've already spoken, Madam. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. Yeah, I think there are a few points I want to make of principle first, and then I'll deal with the comparatives. The first point is that whatever taxpayers' money goes into the post office stays within government. You're just paying from one place to another. Okay, it's not going into the private sector. So let me say this, Chairperson. If the state wants to do this at any number that they tell us, we'll do it at that number. Okay. But what we did do, so that the state has for the first time a clear evaluation of the costs, is we started from the base. There's no upfront payment that was paid to the current incumbent. There's no after the payment participation in debit orders. There's no other payments that are involved in this. Built into our price are a number of very different characteristics in the solution that was then were provided by the incumbent. For example, the state will earn interest on all unearned monies, okay, which belongs to the state, previously earned by the bank. For example, we will provide a certain number of free ATM withdrawals. The cost of an ATM withdrawal is a high percentage of the grant. There are any number of differences. This is not comparing apples with pears. This is comparing apples with fish. Let me also say this, is that the state here, in our view, has got to create an asset. So we've got to build infrastructure. The 1644 that's being bandied about, that is compared to our 21-something, which is being bandied about, by the way, both of those numbers have been revised. And let me say that the 1644 is a five-year-old number, just so that we get it clear in our minds. The services that we were required to quote for in the RFP, the initial RFI, which was go back to February this year, were not the same services that are being provided by the incumbent service provider. They were distinctly different, way ahead of the solution that is currently being proposed. We might argue mischievously so. The principle here that will drive it is that we sought, and to go to the chairperson, my chairperson's point earlier, bear in mind, please, that we are, this is a build, operate, and transfer model. Okay, so we are not keeping this as an asset. So in our numbers that have been quoted there is us, Postbank, spending all of the capital to build the systems on behalf of the state, which will replace the state's dependency on an outside service provider. They will become assets of the state. Whether they've built in post office and transferred to SASA or built in SASA, there is a cost to replace the systems which are being utilized by a private sector participant. That is built in into our figures. At the end of the build, operate, and transfer model that the post office is offering to help with, the state will have an asset, not a dependency. There will never again be a day where someone can phone you up and say, you need us, because we will have solved the thing ourselves. That costs money, chairperson, to build our own systems, to build our own computer capacity. All of that stuff is built in, and the way the post office priced this thing is that we would spend that money ourselves, not from National Treasury. We would spend that money ourselves, and we would seek to recoup it over the five-year period of the build, operate, and transfer model so that we could hand that system back over to SASA when it was done, another organ of state. So I think, you know, the numbers, and I take the other members, honorable members' suggestion, we are an organ of state. We will subject ourselves to the Auditor General's inspection of our costings, inspection of whatever margins may be built in. And if required to do so, we can eliminate those margins, but you will get an absolutely transparent understanding of where taxpayers' money is going. Because none of that money, Chairperson, will go outside of the fiscus. It stays inside the fiscus as we build our own capacity instead of continuing a dependency. Those are the things I want to say in principle, and it would be clear to you, Chairperson, that I feel quite strongly about them, because I do believe that the payment of social grants is not a private sector business, it's a government sector service. And if we can do it ourselves, we should. And we should build that capacity. And once we've built that capacity, we can start talking about other things that the private sector is doing on our behalf at extraordinary cost that we can start doing ourselves at a much lower cost per capita. So, but I think the answer is incomplete in the sense that I haven't reconciled the 2.8 and the 3.7 billion numbers. We are happy, and we have disclosed to National Treasury, and we have disclosed to the IMC, our exact costings and how they're made up. And they also are made up in component parts, and it's important to understand that. So if it is that you just want to use the Postbank for the, which Postbank is a fully fledged member of the national payment system like any other bank, okay? If you just want to use the post office for transactional payments, well, there's a cost for that. It's, you know, I don't want to actually say these costs because they're not public knowledge. If you want the post office to replicate the cash in transit capabilities that are currently outsourced, there's another cost. We've got to buy vehicles, armor those vehicles, buy the cash dispensing machines, rewrite the software that feeds the banking systems, replace the cards which are already in existence. These things all cost money, but they're all very clearly enunciated in there. But what we're doing, Chairperson, which is different, is that we're buying our own house instead of paying rent in someone else's house. And one day we'll live there for free. Thank you.
Just to add, Chair, just to go back to that issue that perhaps I think what we'll do, as one of the honorable members suggested, we are going to share the actual costing with you and give it to the committee for your own benefit to do your comparative analysis. But the biggest issue, like we have said, let's build the state capacity. Let's not build the capacity of private individuals who some of them take that money to other countries other than our country. In this case, it's not even a private individual. It's the post office, which is the state money. Whatever money you might have put to the post office to bail it out, you don't bail it out because the post office is capacitated. But of course, the price at the end of the day will be a price that will be agreed upon by the parties, but we share the actual figures with you.
Chair, one more comment, if you permit me. A lot of the economics of payment of social grants that needs to be focused on happens after the payment of the social grants. So, for example, you know, not everyone draws down all of the money on the first day. And a lot of them have got huge, you know, Section 26A deductions. Okay. We would take instruction from the state about what is permissible and not permissible in that world. Now, you can't stop people. Ultimately, they can draw all their money and go and put it in another bank and enter into those transactions. But we will not be part of it. And a lot of the economics that is being enjoyed by the incumbent is because they eat from the beginning to the end. We are just providing a system here. And whatever margin we may or may not charge will be disclosed to and agreed by National Treasury. Because it's their money. And if we make a profit, National Treasury makes a profit.
Unfortunately, in government, we're not about profit making. We're service providers. Please, we must get that one straight. Also, the underlying message is, whatever service that is given, it must be affordable. Cannot be, because you see, I said to you, I just mentioned the latest developments. Us being degraded to, you don't know the impact. We have not worked out the impact. Now, if government cannot afford, what's going to happen? That's why I say from the very beginning, I think if we are government and we're sensitive to the fact that we are government, then the cost must be at government cost, not private sector costs. That's what I'm, yes. Yes, madam, if you want to talk, you'll raise your hand and then I'll call you to talk. Now, I was saying the main, the underlying message is the service must be affordable. And we are not profit-making. We are a service provider. But please, I want you to understand what government wants. Now, what I'm talking about is policy. Increase of those people, not money building assets. Increase of the recipients of the social grant. There's an outcry as I'm talking now. If you're not aware of it, maybe I should make you aware of it. So that's what we're looking forward to. A service, quality service, that is affordable, but also increase of the recipients. That's all that I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, can I just respond to the point about the press specifically? Okay. The Interministerial Committee asked us not to talk to the press.
Okay. No, I'm not the president.
Now, I don't know who fed them that information.
I don't know. Also,
and we haven't responded to it because we were asked not to. Thank you.
Okay. Honourable Member, Shopestole, and then Honourable Member Gwabas.
No. I want to stop this discussion. No other member should speak on this subject for the simple reason. This is a very sensitive matter. And we can't be discussing it carelessly in public as we do. There are cameras here. You see? Now, the issue here is about creating efficiencies agreed upon between yourselves and SASSA. And there's not a cent that is deducted from the end user, the end recipient, as we understand. So that's the principle. Let's not create an unnecessary hype on the issue. It's already sensitized unnecessarily. Now let's stop this discussion and not go further with it. What we would want is creating capacity for the state to deliver. That's the key. Thank you.
Right, honourable members, I take it that rounds up the discussion on the matter. As long as you are aware that this is in the public domain, okay, and then you then know how to respond to it. I'm sure I would like to also close by saying, indeed, the service must be affordable, and we must increase the number of recipients. Thank you very much. I think we're done with you now. Okay. But thank you for coming, and thank you for your presentation, both presentations. At least they've given us deeper insights on what is happening. And I'm sure you've also registered our concerns, so you will then work around that and look at how you can make us comfortable.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Mayor.
All right, Honourable Members.